Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tohaka Monael Bay, and this evening we have part two of our previous broadcast on Moorish, America, law, contracts, and court. And we're going to look at this thing this evening from a whole different perspective. Keep in mind, we're offering our free articles this evening, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and Secrets of America. Also, for those of you who are on your social sites, go ahead and send me a friend request. If you're on Facebook or LinkedIn, to Tohaka Amana Elbe, and we'll go ahead and grant that. That'll give you access to my wall. And also, for those of you, and it's very, very important for you to access my archives so that you have the tools and you can actually do something about the information that we're posting here for you, and so that you can make some headways. Now, before we get started, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to listen to what the brothers got to say about this thing before we get down on into the broadcast. So you all hold your hat, and we'll be right back. Don't forget to go ahead and raise your hand if you got any questions or comments, and we'll open up the line to you.
Black men or young black men is all about timing, catching them at the right time. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when the black man is most vulnerable is when he is incarcerated. You can get their attention that way. When they just getting out of incarceration, getting on the streets.
Exactly.
Or when there's been a real tragic in their family. Mm-hmm. That's the most time, vulnerable time to get to a black man. Because he's hurting, and there's something that has transpired to get his attention. But when there's nothing to get his attention, he's hard in San Quentin still.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody out there nowadays don't want to be called a punk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want nobody want to be soft. Don't nobody want to feel like they're wrong or nobody telling them nothing. Because we're dealing with an airhead generation where we got computers now, everybody know. And if you don't know the latest slang, you're a square. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's how young people think.
But I'll get your opinion, man. Tell your opinion about what you think about a lot of these young cats nowadays, man. Because a lot of cats, man, they get up on the computer. You know, you didn't live that life.
Well,
you didn't live that life. But I'm just saying, you lived that life. But, you know, it's a lot of cats that talk, but what's the real about it? Go give your opinion, man.
It's a different generation now, man. You know what I'm saying? You got more youngsters now that don't have a father in their household than I was coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you got more mothers, understand me, that's giving up their kids than ever in the time of age than when I was coming along.
Exactly.
Where motherly love and fatherly love is not even a word in the household anymore.
Exactly, man.
It's all about videos. It's all about drug selling. It's all about weed smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about, understand me, hustling now.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And that's the type of generation we're living in now where, you know, the computer age. Then actually, Facebook then took over the nation, especially
exactly.
In the ghetto.
Exactly.
So in order to get to a person, you can't even talk to them no more. They say, talk to me on Facebook.
There we go.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But our ordinary sitting down talking to a person, you can't really understand me getting understanding from them because half the time they're intoxicated, they're high, or they in such a rush to do something.
Exactly.
So how can you get to somebody, man, that don't want to sit and listen? That's the thing.
And the thing is, like we were sitting up there saying, most black folks, it's like, you know, a lot of cats be talking, but it's like, man, you got to want to change. And like you sit there and said, you know, as far as talking, you know, it ain't used to talking to somebody who don't want to sit there and change. That's why I tell you what I'll be talking up on the YouTube. You know what I mean? Like, right, you agree with that, right, man?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. If you're not willing to change, if you're not willing to understand me, listen.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't going to learn anything, and you're not going to make a move to do anything positive. But the thing that I've witnessed with young people now, as well as old people, that everybody know everything before you say it. What's
mm-hmm.
understood don't need no understanding.
Exactly.
But the thing I look at it is that when a person making the same mistakes over and over and over and over again, that's insane. Like everybody know this.
Exactly.
We know that.
Exactly.
But it don't hurt to sit down and listen to somebody. Because I was always told, if you listen, understand, you'll learn something.
Exactly.
But what good is learning something if you don't apply to your learning?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And I respect your opinion because, see, I know that you done been through stuff. Yeah,
I know what you come from.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
You know, so man, you've been in our family for a long time, man, since I've been a young kid. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's like, man, I know what you done been through. I know you can give some good advice out there, man.
Right.
You know?
Yep, the advice that I feel like I can give to any man, black man, white man, whatever man that's out there seeking for any type of understanding, help, is to first acknowledge Jehovah God. That's
mm-hmm.
the first thing you got to do. Realize that there's a God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then you get down to business with yourself. You know what I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
say, you know, what is it in life that I can do to do something positive? If it's nothing but saying a positive word to somebody, you know what I mean, an encouraging word to somebody. But if you is in a negative environment or you're surrounded by negativity, a lot of times you don't have anything positive to say anything to people because that's what you're breathing, you know what
exactly.
I'm saying? And when positivity do come your way, sometimes
mm-hmm.
I know when I was young, when somebody came to me with something positive, I felt like they was really understanding me, just saying something to me. It made me feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I've experienced is that it's a different generation, man, of people.
A different
right
generation.
Well, youngsters is you know, into everything but the right thing.
Exactly.
And disrespecting elderly people.
Exactly.
And you know, not having like that father figure at the house, like I said from the beginning.
Exactly. And then telling this man too, it's like they emulating, trying to emulate something that y'all done already did, you know what I mean?
Yeah, all of this stuff.
All of this stuff is right here. It, you know what I mean? A lot of cats, they talk, but they don't talk the walk. They, you know how it goes. They talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk.
Right.
But you know, you didn't serve time. You didn't been, you know, you didn't live that street life. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And this is why I be trying to tell people, man. Excuse me, I'm going. Man. This is why I be trying to tell people, man, is that I got a lot of family members, and you're going to be my witness to this.
Right.
How many people have been in it? Most people in the family, most at least men, they'd have been where? Penitentiary?
Yep.
They'd have been in a dope gang living street life, right?
Yep, all of that.
You know what I mean?
All of that.
It's my brother-in-law, man. Been my brother-in-law for, shoot, man, ever since I was a young teenager.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Been there,
and
done
OG.
That.
And OG. Been there, done that. So
man,
things I be trying to tell people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and me and him, we get along real good, you know? And you know I be trying to, you know, be on the positive tip, man. You know,
right,
even
right.
you already know, I don't be up on that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right,
but this
know.
Is the type, you know, the things, man, I'm glad you did it, you know, at least let me interview you a little bit, man.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, you know, I got a lot of stuff that I can say to people.
Oh, I already know.
And the thing that I've been through, I don't wish that on no man, you know, because you got a lot of these what we call new booties. Guys that just getting up in the game and thinking they know a lot of stuff
mm-hmm.
and thinking going to the penitentiary is where it's at
mm-hmm.
and thinking disrespecting a person
get
or killing a person, you know what I mean?
Wait,
it's what it's all
wait,
about.
Wait, say it one more time, go ahead.
Disrespecting people and you're killing people and whatever, you know what I mean? And that's supposed to be the hard way to go, but...
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man,
but what's going to happen when they get in that penitentiary,
hey,
though,
man,
with them real killers, though, and all that stuff?
It's a different ball game.
It's a different ball game.
It's a different ball game. You don't have your pistols there.
Yeah, exactly.
And 10 times out of 10, with a gang member or whoever, you got heart, but you're going to run into somebody that got more heart than you, man, and what you're doing is facing something that you can't get away from, you can't run and hide from.
Exactly.
And so you got to bring your noise on, man, and when you're not really understand me, equipped to fight and use your gun all the time, you can't really run from nobody. You got to face the facts. And I done seen Kev's gang members, a lot of game members fold under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? When the cell doors open, man, they don't even come out their cell because they already know what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying every gang member is a punk. I'm not saying that everybody's out there, you know what I mean, what they doing is weak. But what I'm saying to you, that's not the road to go, man. You know, because it's a lie, really, because once you get behind them bars, man, it's a whole different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it ain't like what everybody telling you it is, you know. It's you know, cats get in there, man, and just lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And you go in there with, what, 3, 4, 5 years, 10 years, and get a life sentence while you're in there for getting the stabbers and stickings, man. It's just a whole different ball game. I don't wish that on nobody. I did in my life 25 years altogether in the penitentiary, bro. And I'm talking 10 or 5 or 3, 32 and 80, another 5, understand? But 10 out of state, I did time, man, to the point to where I had to psych myself out every day that I was going home because mm-hmm. I had so much time on my hand.
And I don't want to take up too much of your time, but at the end of the day, man, was it worth it? You know what I mean?
It wasn't worth it, man. If I can do it all over again, I would have got me a 9 to 5. I would have just, whatever, if it took picking up cans or whatever, man, to keep my sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you go to the penitentiary, you're a different person, man.
Mm-hmm.
You miss out on a lot of things, and it might seem as though at that time, man, that it's all good, but it's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, they have a saying in the penitentiary, we didn't use the N-word, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We wish an N-word.
Like a lot of cats are doing right now, you know. Yeah.
We start saying we wish a wood would.
Mm-hmm.
And wood is a word that we use out here, but it's no disrespect to nobody, but we just trying to slash from using the N-word, you know what I'm saying? And the OGs make you give them 50 push-ups if you use the N-word to try to break you out of that slang that you're in. You know what I'm saying? And then you got youngsters now using the N-words. Then you got white people using the N-words. Then you got Mexicans using the N-word. Then you got Orientals mm-hmm. using the N-word. And it look like what happened to the struggle, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And certain people, you can't use that N-word around. You can't
use
that N-word around me. I don't know who then gave anybody permission to feel as though that was right again.
But you know what? This is why I sit here and say, I've said it before. It's like, black folks, man, we need to start getting away from saying that. Like you said, like in the band, he said it.
Yeah.
You didn't allow you to sit there and say it. You know what I mean? That's why I sit there. That's why I don't really use it no more unless I get mad or something. Don't get me wrong. But as far as my day-to-day conversation, I don't be sitting up there saying it, you know what I mean, no
yeah.
more. Because it's a little in the ignorance, like, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you can't go around calling each other that. Then as soon as somebody else says, like, oh, man, we got to realize, man, we ain't doing each other justice, man, by even saying that, man.
Right.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I just thought we had to hear from the brothers about some crucial things inside the country. We're going to get into dealing with the courts, what to say up in there, try to get a complete understanding about the Social Security card and all of that stuff here this evening. But I want to say for those of you who are just tuning in, we are offering one of the most awesome libraries inside the United States. The way you access that is go to tahakaarchives.org, okay? Go to tahakaarchive.org. We're going to deal with advocate and revocate so we can understand what that's all about. We're going to deal with all this stuff this evening, and we have a ton of information. So you all just sit tight for a minute, and we're going to go over and deal with a situation where we are talking about people of African descent only, and involving this stuff in the United States. We hear so often people talk about Americans, the Constitution, and we need to know where we fit in all of this stuff. So y'all sit back, hold your hat. We're going to run this right quick. And if you all got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand.
The Dred Scott decision, which was handed down by the Supreme Court in 1857, is one of the most famous or infamous decisions in all of the history of the Supreme Court. And it arose out of some complicated issues. But what it basically had to do with was the power of Congress to prohibit slavery in the Western territories. Dred Scott had been brought as a slave into the territory of Wisconsin, where slavery had been barred by Congress, and later he sued for his freedom on the ground that he had been in a place where slavery had been abolished and therefore should be considered free. And this goes all the way up through various courts, and the Supreme Court eventually rules, no, Dred Scott's not free, because two reasons. One, Congress does not have the right to prohibit slavery in the territories, and this basically declares the Republican Party unconstitutional. The Republican platform, Lincoln's platform, which is to prohibit slavery in the territories, the Supreme Court said you can't do that. Slavery is a right to go anywhere within the country in a territory, not a state. A state can abolish slavery. Illinois did. But the territories which belong to the whole country, slavery is a right to go there. The second principle put down by Chief Justice Taney in the Dred Scott decision was that blacks cannot be citizens of the United States. In a sense, Dred Scott can't even sue because he's not an American. This is one of the best examples of this notion of blacks as aliens. Even though he's born here and everything, he is not an American. The American family, as Taney says, is for white people. And in the most famous sentence in that decision, he says, a black man has no rights which a white man is bound to respect. Now, he's not saying blacks can be killed with impunity. What he's saying is, legally speaking, they are not part of the body politic. They are not part of the we the people that created the Constitution, and therefore they're just outside of the system. So they don't have any rights under the Constitution because the Constitution is for white people. Now, this people have denounced Taney ever since for this, and for good reason, but the fact is this decision was codifying widely held views in American society, North and South. You're blaming the messenger, in a sense, if you simply hold the Chief Justice responsible for these views. But it's certainly the position that Congress could not stop the westward spread of slavery discredited the Supreme Court in the eyes of large numbers of Northerners, including Lincoln. Lincoln is denouncing them after this and saying, Lincoln, who is a law-abiding guy, says we don't have to recognize this decision. We're going to ignore it. It's a bad decision. And when the Republicans get in, we are not going to abide by the Dred Scott decision. So it shows you how far the sectional dispute has gotten that a guy like Lincoln will say the ruling of the Supreme Court can just be ignored because it's so wrong-headed.
Okay, now, did y'all hear that? We ain't through. It's gone.
The Dred Scott decision is the result of a case that had begun in the 1840s and wended its way up through the state courts of Missouri and then into federal court. It comes to its climax in the winter of 1856 to 57. In that interim where James Buchanan of Pennsylvania has been elected president but doesn't actually take office until March 4th, at that time was when the president's inaugurated. Irregularly, one might say, Buchanan, as president-elect, is in touch with one of the members of the Supreme Court, Greer of Pennsylvania, about what's going on in the court's deliberations. And it becomes clear that there's a 5-4 majority on the court in favor of the Southern position, that is, that slavery cannot be prohibited from going into the territories. But Buchanan realizes that a 5-4 decision, 5 Southerners versus 4 Northerners, is not going to have any legitimacy at all in the North. And he basically twists the arm of Greer from Pennsylvania to go along with the majority. So in the end, you get a 6-3 decision, ultimately, with this one Northerner on the side. And Buchanan thinks this is going to solve the slavery issue. He's coming into office a few days after he's inaugurated. The decision is handed down. And he says, okay, the Supreme Court has decided, and this will settle the slavery issue, which the issue of the westward expansion of slavery had been roiling politics since the 1840s. The Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854, which opened the Kansas area to the possible expansion of slavery, had disrupted the political system completely and brought Lincoln and others back into political life. The decision is meant to eliminate basically the Republican Party, but it also poses a big problem for Stephen Douglas, the leading Democrat, because Douglas's position was popular sovereignty. That is to say, the people, the residents of a territory, have a right to decide for themselves if they want slavery or not. Well, Southerners immediately say, now, wait a minute. If the Supreme Court says slavery must go into every territory, how can the people of a territory keep it out? They have no more right to deprive us of that ability to take slaves there than Congress does. So how can there be popular sovereignty? In the Lincoln-Douglas debates, Lincoln asks Douglas this famous Freeport question at Freeport, Illinois, specifically says, in in accordance with the Dred Scott decision, can a territory legally keep slavery out of it? He's trying to widen the breach in the Democratic Party between Southern Democrats and Northern Democrats like Douglas, who still want to maintain a position that the territories can keep slavery out if they want. Douglas says, yes, they can, not by passing a law prohibiting slavery, because the Supreme Court has said they can't do that, but by simply refusing to give protection to slavery. Slavery needs a whole edifice of legal and police protection. If you refuse to give it protection, it can't go in. So therefore, the territory has the ability to keep it out, even with the Dred Scott decision in place. Well, of course, Southerners say, well, that's no good. How could a territory deprived of our right? And that leads the South to move to its next position, which is Congress must protect slavery in the territory. If a territorial legislature refuses to protect slavery, then Congress has to go in there and protect it. So that means that what they call a congressional slave code. Congress has got to pass the laws now guaranteeing slavery in all the western territories of the United States. So now Douglas will not accept that any more than any other northerner will, and that position of the Southern Democrats eventually is the rock on which the Democratic Party splits apart in 1860. The Southern demand for a slave code in the territories and the Northern Democrats' refusal to accept that position. So ultimately, the Dred Scott decision is really one of the key things in this. Most African Americans were bitterly opposed to the idea of colonization. In fact, some people date the beginning of the abolitionist movement not from William Lloyd Garrison's publication of the newspaper The Liberator in 1831, which some people say, but actually in 1817. In 1816, the American Colonization Society is formed. The colony of Liberia is set up in Africa as a place where colonized blacks from America will be sent. The capital of Liberia is called Monrovia, after President Monroe. So this is, you know, a pretty close connection. In January 1817, the first black convention in American history is held in Philadelphia, free blacks from all over the country, and they strongly oppose colonization. They are mobilized into action, and they say, we are not Africans, we are free Americans, we demand our rights as American citizens, we do not want to be sent out of this country. And in a sense, this is the beginning of the modern abolitionist movement, because what distinguishes abolitionists from many others is not just their hostility to slavery, but that they say black people must be recognized as Americans and given their rights as Americans. That's what makes them so unpopular in the North, not that they attack slavery, which a lot of people will say, I'm attack slavery, but they say, no, we free the slaves and make them equal citizens in the country, and that's a very radical idea. Now, by the 1850s, there are some African Americans who do say there is no hope in this country, they'll never get equality. Martin Delaney, a black abolitionist, actually goes to Africa and tours the Niger River Valley looking for a place where African Americans can emigrate to. Others look to Haiti or parts of Central America. This is different. This is voluntary emigration. It's different to say, okay, if black people want to leave, they should, than to say colonization, the government's going to ship you out whether you want to go or not. The number of African Americans who support emigration from the country is small. It's real, but it's small. It never really encompasses a large number of blacks in this period. A lot of the blacks who did go to Africa actually went as missionaries, religious missionaries, to try to uplift, as it were, the native Africans and teach them Christianity. It's a very interesting dynamic, because in a certain sense, the black Americans who went to Liberia, Sierra Leone, had bought into a lot of the main themes, you know, of American history, of civilization, the notion that America represents a higher civilization, Africa is backward and uncivilized, and they're going back not to find their homeland, but to help raise up the benighted people of Africa. And they discover, of course, that they are very different from Africans in some ways, and it's not a homecoming in that sense, it's a missionary endeavor. So the number of black Africans who actually go to live and want to become part of African society is quite small at this time.
Okay, that gives us a little breakdown on our position down here in this country, and what words to use and what words not to use. But let's look at something else here.
Islam, Abarigani, Gino Loco Nani, Bandele, Chief Noble Bandele, Elamine. This particular subject is the Black Laws edition, the Black Law series, as you will. And, you know, what's been on my mind lately is the student loans, you know. How many of us got student loans out here, you know? I really believe they could be the next market to bust, in like similar to the housing bubble that burst in 2008. So I think that this needs to be dealt with, because very much like what happened with the housing market, where they were giving loans and houses to people who could not afford them, and then when it was time to pay up, nobody had money. The student loans are very similar, because the student loan can be given practically to everybody, you know. And, you know, the thing about it is, how many of those people, you know, actually finish school? And then you look further, how many of those people actually go on to have more lucrative jobs and actually, you know, do something in their career, or, you know, get paid professionally for what they got their degree for? So, you know, there's a lot of circumstances and there's a lot of equations that can be found in when you're looking at what the student loan does and how they just give out loans to everybody, you know. But the question is, are student loans fraud? Now, me personally, there are three words that we're going to deal with today from the Black Laws Dictionary. For those who do not know, the Black Laws Dictionary is very essential in a household. You need to go get one. You need to go buy one today. I got this one at Half Price Bookstores. No selling that. But from Half Price Bookstores for like $5, $6. So, I mean, if you got your eye out there, you'll find them. But you need that. But the three words that we're going to deal with today is based off of what a student loan is. You know, student loan, from my own study and from my own experience with the creditors of student loan departments, their major argument is that you owe the money because you signed a promissory note. Now, everybody remembers when they got the student loans, or, I mean, any loan for that matter. It could be a house. But when we got these student loans, remember signing off on a promissory note. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the definition of promissory note out the Black Laws Dictionary. Understand that. Promissory note. This is also the abridged. This is abridged, so it's not the full, but I just need to give you a general understanding of the definition. But the promissory note is a promise or engagement in willing to pay a specified sum at a time therein limited or on demand or at sight to a person therein named or to his order or bearer. A written promise made by one or more to pay another or order or bearer at the specified time, a specific amount of money or other articles of value. Okay? Now it goes on to say that it's a signed paper promising to pay another sum of money. Now, okay, hence the word promissory. No, we get that. But that said, and it also says an unconditional written promise to pay a specified sum of money on demand or at specified date. Okay, we get that. Now, this is the part where it gets tricky. It says that such a note is negotiable if signed by the maker and containing an unconditional promise to pay a sum certain in money, either on demand or at definite time, and payable to the order of the bearer. So now, the key word in that last phrase is negotiable. It said such a note is negotiable if signed. So, what does the word negotiable mean? Well, let's go there. The word negotiable, according to Black Law's Dictionary, 5th edition, it says that negotiable is legally capable of being transferred from endorsement or delivery, usually said of checks and notes, and sometimes of stocks and bearer bonds. Did you hear that? So, it said that this promissory note is negotiable. And negotiable is saying that it can be transferred, or transferred by endorsement or delivery. See commercial paper, negotiable instruments, or non-negotiable. So let's look at negotiable instruments, which is pretty much the same word, because they saying that this promissory note is also compared to a check, and I said to go negotiable instrument. So a negotiable instrument, now before I go into that, understand that these negotiable instruments, these terms that we're using, are based off of uniform commercial codes, UCC. This is the real stuff. This is what UCCs really are about. They're not, I'm not talking about the straw man and all that stuff right here and all that, but I'm saying that actually when you're dealing with promissory notes, that is a UCC issue. That's where they try to tell you that they don't, UCCs don't apply to them, but the terminology and everything that they're using is Uniform Commercial Code. So to say that, it says negotiable instrument to be negotiable within the meaning of UCC, Article 3. An instrument must meet the requirements set in Section 3-104. Okay, it says it must be in writing, signed by the marker or drawer. It must contain unconditional promise or order. For example, a check. Or to pay a certain sum of money. It must be payable on demand or at a definite time. It must be payable to the bearer or to order. Pay to the order of Daniel. Pay to whoever, like a check. It says it must not contain any other promise, other obligation, or power given to it. So when you got this promissory note, it's got the amount of money you owe on there, saying what you owe, and you got your name signed on it. So you saying that you promised to pay that money back based on the promissory. Now, the issue is that, I didn't know that a promissory note was negotiable, that it can be used as a check. It also said commercial paper. What's commercial paper? Let's get into it. Commercial paper. It says commercial paper, bills of exchange. Example, drafts, promissory notes, bank checks, and other negotiable instruments for the payment of money, which by their form, on their face, purport to be such instruments. It says UCC Article 3 is the general law governing commercial paper. Terms include short-term notes issued by corporate borrowers, fee, bearer, instrument, negotiable instruments, short-term paper. Okay? Now, I'm going to stop there because I want to give more substance to what these politicians are saying. They're saying that your promissory note is like a check. It's a promise. So, if it's a promise, then they are treating that promissory note as if it's money, as if it's commercial money. Like when they said a check, you can go to a store, write a check. A check is what? Nothing but you saying, I promise to pay for this. You take this paper to my bank, they will pay for me. They'll pay for me out of my account. So it's a note that bears something owed from a borrower to a lender. That's the same thing as a promissory note, because you sit there and say, okay, I promise to pay back $5,945 from this quarter in school from this particular Stanford loan. I promised to pay that. I signed my name. So now, what if they took the check? I mean, that they took that promissory note and somehow they opened up an account in that name. Because that promissory note is looked at as money from the signature. Because the promissory note became commercial paper when you signed it. It became a negotiable instrument when signed. So now, you've got to pay back something that you actually created with your signature plus interest. So what that means is that the person that said that they lend the money to you did not actually lend the money to you. That the, according to the Fair Debt Collection Act, the Fair Debt Credit through Uniform Commercial Codes, when you borrow money from someone, they have to actually have the money. So if I borrow $20 from someone, then it should come out of their pocket. They're saying I'm loaning you money, meaning that I actually had the money on hand, not that I'm going to loan you money. What I'm going to do is go get some money from Fred, and then I'm going to charge you this much so I can pay back Fred and have some money in my pocket. That's a scam. That's called ultra virus. Look that word up. That'll be our last word. And that wasn't even planned. I just thought that we should look this word up, because ultra virus is ultra-virus is acts beyond the scope of powers of a corporation as defined by its charter of laws of state of corporation of incorporation. The term has a broad application and includes not only acts prohibited by the charter, but acts which are in excess of powers granted and not prohibited, and generally apply either when a corporation has no power whatsoever to do an act, or when the corporation has the power but exercises it irregularly. By doctrine of ultra vires, a contract made by a corporation beyond the scope of its corporate powers is unlawful. So, ultra vires is saying that if a corporation outstrips its boundaries of limitations, if it steps outside of its limitations to do some kind of power, then it is by unlawful. NCS, all these third-party debt collectors have not shown proof to this day. Any question I've asked, and because of that, they will never be able to make a move on the money. So if you can put this into some type of dispute, with them, not based on what they understand fraud to be, but what you understand as fraud, then you have a case to deal with. So that's all I got to say on that. That's the first Black Law lesson. We're going to get into more Black Law lessons. Until then, Tuta Nana.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, if any of you have any questions or comments you'd like to make, go ahead and raise your hand at any time during this broadcast, and we'll open up the lines and hear what you got to say. Okay? Don't hesitate.
This is a response to a video link that was just given to me, and I wanted my comments on it. And this is something everybody should be watching, but watch it from a loving perspective. Jump into the parallel world of viewing everything from a loving perspective. It's the only way you're going to see what the solutions are. Now, the video is, listen very carefully, ex-New World Order banker tells all. Now, part of the game that's being played is this New World Order needs you to be angry at them. They get more strength. They get more power as long as you're angry. As long as you are focused on, you know, let's get even, let's get war, you know, then you are creating chaos, and they happen to love that. They can manipulate you. You are going to turn into them, and you won't even see it coming. There are some things that you need to kind of wake up to. And you know, in this video, they say that they're going to nuke everybody. You know, they're going to radiate everybody on the planet while they bury themselves in the ground and think they're safe. You got to kind of look at their insanity. They're going to sort of put themselves in their own jail, you know. They think they're going to have food, but there's not going to be any food for them. They think they're going to be saved, but they're not going to be saved. You know, they are destroying themselves, and they don't even see it. They're entombing themselves, because if you radiate the whole freaking planet, what does that do? It melts everything on the freaking planet to the point where they won't be able to get themselves out. So you can bury yourself in a cave. You know, you can go millions, you know, like way deep down into the earth and radiate the whole freaking planet. But guess what? You're entombed inside the earth, and you can't control the earth. The earth right now is about to make some big, huge changes that just because you think that your metal or your steel or whatever you think is more powerful than the planet's going to just crush you. You know, it's moving and turning, and it's going to crush all of these evil people in the tomb that they're burying themselves in. So it's actually quite funny when you see what these people are doing. And you got to understand that just like the Georgia Guidestones, you create the path, you create the belief, you create the anger, you create that you know, everybody living in that negative parallel world by putting a big few friggin' statue up there that says this is you know, the plan. And, you know, having this guy, this ex-banker, come out and tell all, well, that's just part of the plan. You know, he's going to tell you the truth of what's going on, and what's it going to do? It's going to get you all frustrated. It's going to get you all pissed off. It's going to create chaos between each other. And yet, there, you know, if you look at it from a loving perspective, you know, it's don't be frustrated by the information this guy's telling you. It's like, this information is power. You know, don't buy into the game, because yes, we are creating our own slave camps. We're driving ourselves right into our own oven, and we can't see each other doing it to each other. Any job you're working at, I would quit. Either that, or use that job to start benefiting people instead of benefiting the guy that's getting rich off of you, off of your labor. You are the slave and don't know it. You may have a big house, you may have a big car, you know, but that is just your carrot to make you a slave to kill other people. But you're next. You know, they're going to kill you. Just like if you watch this video, these elite people, you know, they'll have sex with your kids and they don't give a shit. You know, they don't give a shit about you as you help them. You know, so you can only really see it. You can only really wake up if you truly love your own children. And you can see that what it is you do to other people, you're allowing somebody else to do that to your own kids. And that's been the driving force for me, is I see what the world is doing to my children. And I do see my kids, the boys in particular, are getting caught up in this, it's all about money and you got to get an education and that's the only way that you're going to succeed in the world. And there's no sense talking to them. You know, I'm a mother on welfare, so, you know, I know shit. Their father, you know, who didn't financially support them or give a shit about teaching my children the meaning of life, he really taught them, don't listen to your mother. And
okay, Moores, we're back. I was in the chat room dealing with the brothers and sisters there, and I appreciate you all. I have a caller with his hand raised. I'm going to open up the line. Area code 323, could you tell us who you are, where you calling from, what's your question or comment?
Peace, Mo. This is D. Hughes Bay calling from northwest of Maxim.
Okay,
and,
brother.
Yeah, I was in the chat room with you guys. And, as far as the brother talking about the student loans being fraud and everything, what we have to understand is that we sign contracts. You know, one, we don't know, like, the different types of contracts, you know, and when you sign contracts, it's all about negotiations, and you're supposed to read those things, you know? You know, you can't too much complain about some being fraud when we signed into fraudulent instruments, you know, and
that is absolutely correct.
Yeah, the brother also mentioned ultraviers. Now, what he said was true about ultraviers. I mean, when someone has a corporate articles of incorporation, they're not supposed to go outside or do anything outside of what those articles of incorporation those articles allow you to do. However, what's been changed is that simply starting a corporation, all you have to really do is put down that you're going to do anything that's legal, you know, which basically opens up a person's or a corporation's articles of incorporation to for them to do just about anything. Like if I wanted to start one to be a auto shop, just to repair cars. But if I decided to get into, anything else, all I have to do is write that in my charters, send it to the state, and now I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how a lot of ultraviers are being able to be defeated in court, by them just not really specifying what they want to do, but just simply saying, I'm going to do anything that's legal, you know.
Okay.
And, there's a brother in there also mentioning the sister that's locked up right now. I think she's still locked up for the adverse possession, you know. And
okay.
What we have to understand is that we as Moors, and I know we get excited, we get a little bit of information, and we move on it. without having a complete understanding of it. Now, technically, that sister should be able to get herself out. You know, she's supposed to know the things to do to get herself out. Like every individual more, I know we like to complain about people charging us for nationality packages, but technically you should be able to pull out a sheet of paper and demonstrate your nationality on the sheet of paper, go get it notarized, and do what you're supposed to do with it. You know, that's okay. Us. We have to do our due diligence. You know, and maybe the sister didn't pay. Maybe the sister should have paid the $4,000, you know, utility bill. I don't know the details of it, but she should be able to get her stuff out of that situation with nobody's help. You know, it's just cool to have the moral support, but she should be able to demonstrate herself. You know, because building a nation starts from within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of where you are, locked up or not. You know, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, I have to agree with you. I preach just the same gospel, and I try to slow down because I know people get tired of hearing the same thing from me over and over and over. You have to study. You have to learn. You have to get the information on the book. It does require reading. When the Super Bowl come on, you need to be at the gun range practicing. You be in a library somewhere. You know, because that's designed to keep you off balance and all this stuff here. But and I thank you so much for calling in. I'm gonna deal with this thing from another perspective, so we can get some enlightenment on the whole thing. And I think I'm gonna lay this out for the basic foundation for the rest of the broadcast. We get this understood. Right. I think we might can make some progress.
All right, now peace.
All right, bro. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, anybody else got their hands raised, go ahead and raise them now, and I'll go ahead and open up the line, and I'll answer your question and comment, but if not, let's just sit back for a minute and check this next plug out and listen very, very intently. Got your paper and pencil handy, so you have to take some note on this thing. See you.
What a wonderful, wonderful world this would be. What a wonderful, wonderful world.
Hi, my name is Steven Sindoni. Today's video is entitled The Act of 1871. In today's program, I will put the spotlight on an act that was enacted in the year of 1871 on February 21st. The Congress passes an act to provide a government for the District of Columbia, also known as the Act of 1871. What I am about to share with you today is the premise for all the things that are happening here today in the year 2012. When you fully understand the ramifications of the past, you will then fully understand the ramifications of the present, and you will know how to change the future. And here is where our story begins. With no constitutional authority to do so, Congress creates a separate form of government for the District of Columbia, a 10-mile square parcel of land. The act was passed when the country was weakened and financially depleted in the aftermath of the Civil War. It was at that time a strategic move by foreign interests, international bankers, who were intent upon gaining a stranglehold on the coffers and neck of America. Congress cut a deal with the international bankers, specifically the Rothschilds of London, to incur a debt to said bankers. Because the bankers were not about to lend money to a floundering nation without serious stipulations, they devised a way to get their foot in the door of the United States. The Act of 1871 formed a corporation called the United States, all in capital letters. The corporation, owned by foreign interests, moved in and shoved the original Constitution into a dustbin. With the Act of 1871, the organic Constitution was defaced and, in effect, vandalized and sabotaged. When the title was capitalized and the word for was changed to of in the title. The Constitution of the United States of America is the Constitution of the Incorporated United States of America in all capital letters. It operates in an economic capacity and has been used to fool the people into thinking it governs the Republic. It does not. Capitalization is not insignificant when one is referring to a legal document. This seemingly minor alteration has had a major impact on every subsequent generation of Americans. What Congress did by passing the Act of 1871 was create an entirely new document, a constitution for the government of the District of Columbia, an incorporated government. This newly altered constitution was not intended to benefit the Republic. It benefits only the corporation of the United States of America and operates entirely outside the original organic constitution. Instead of having absolute and unalienable rights guaranteed under the organic constitution, we the people now have relative rights or privileges. One example is the sovereign's right to travel, which has now been transformed under corporate government policy into a privilege that requires citizens to be licensed. An example would be passports. By passing the Act of 1871, Congress committed treason against the people who were sovereign under the grants and decrees of the Declaration of Independence and the Organic Constitution. The Act of 1871 became the foundation of all the treason since committed by government officials. The United States isn't a country. It's a corporation. In preparation for stealing America, the puppets of Britain's banking cabal had already created a second government, a shadow government designed to manage what the common herd believed was a democracy, but what was really was an incorporated United States. And conspiring together, this two-headed monster disallowed the common herd all of their sovereign rights under the original Constitution. To fully understand how our rights of sovereignty were ended, you must know the full meaning of the word sovereign, which means chief or highest supreme power, superior in position to all others, independent of and unlimited by others, possessing or entitled to original and independent authority or jurisdiction. This description I have cited can be found in Webster's Dictionary. In short, our government, which was created by and for us as sovereigns, free citizens deemed to have the highest authority in the land, was stolen from us along with our rights. It is important to keep in mind here that according to the original Constitution, only we the people are sovereign. The government is not sovereign. Our original Declaration of Independence states, government is subject to the consent of the governed, and that's us. It doesn't take a constitutional historian to figure out that the United States government has not been subject to the consent of the governed since long before you and I were born. Rather, the governed are subject to the whim and greed of the corporation, which has stretched its tentacles beyond the 10-mile square parcel of land known as the District of Columbia. In fact, it has invaded every state of the Republic. Mind you, the corporation has no jurisdiction beyond the District of Columbia. You just think it does. You see, my friends, you are presumed to know the law, which is very weird since we the people are taught nothing about the law in school. We memorize obscure facts and phrases here and there, and our teachers only gloss over the Bill of Rights. And our schools, which are controlled by the corporate government, don't delve into the Constitution at depth. After all, the corporation was established to indoctrinate and dumb down the masses, not to teach anything of value or importance. And certainly, no one ever mentioned that America was sold out to foreign interests, and that we were beneficiaries of the debt incurred by Congress, or that we were in debt to the international bankers. Yet for generations, Americans have had the bulk of their earnings confiscated to pay a massive debt that they did not incur. There has been an endless stream of things the people were not told, and now that you are being told, how do you feel about being made the recipient of a debt without your knowledge or consent? If the passage of the Act of 1871, Congress set a series of subtle and overt deceptions into motion, deceptions in the form of decisions that were meant to sell us down the river. And over time, the Republic took it on the chin until it was knocked down and counted out by a TKO. With the surrender of the people's gold in 1933, the common herd was handed over to illegitimate law. And I'll bet you weren't taught that in school. And now the final snapshot. our corporate form of governance is based on Roman civil law and admiralty or maritime law, which is also known as the divine right of kings and the law of the seas, another fact of American history not taught in our schools. And here's another wake-up call for you. Roman civil law was fully established in the 13 colonies before our nation began and then became managed by private international law. In other words, the government created for the District of Columbia via the Act of 1871 operates solely under private international law, not common law, which was the foundation of our constitutional republic. And it is this fact that has impacted all Americans in concrete ways. For instance, although private international law is technically only applicable within the District of Columbia and not in the other states of the Union, the arms of the Corporation of the United States are called departments. As an example, the Justice Department, the Treasury Department, and those departments affect everyone, no matter where and what state that you live. Guess what? Each department belongs to the corporation, to the all capital letter, United States. I now pose the question, how do you feel that you know that you are now being ruled by a corporation? A corporation that operates under Roman civil law outside the original Constitution. I challenge everyone listening to contact their congressman and see what they have to say about this. Congress is fully aware of this deception. What this great deception really means is that the members of Congress do not work for us, for you and me. They work for the corporation, for the all capital letter United States. Is it any wonder why we can't get Congress to do anything on our behalf or meet our demands or answer our questions? And here's the bottom line. Technically, legally, or any other way you want to look at this matter, the corporate government of the all capital letter United States has no jurisdiction or authority in any state of the Union, the Republic, beyond the District of Columbia. Let that tidbit sink in, then ask yourself, could this deception have occurred without full knowledge and complicity of the Congress? Do you think it happened by accident? And if you do, you're deceiving yourself. There are no accidents and there are no coincidences. Face the facts and confront the truth. Remember, you are presumed to know the law. They know you don't know the law, and, for that matter, your history. Why? Because no concerted effort was ever made to teach you or otherwise or inform you. As a sovereign, you are entitled to full disclosure of all facts. As a slave, you are entitled to nothing other than what the corporation decides to give you. Remember also that ignorance of the law is no excuse. It's your responsibility and obligation to learn the law and know how it applies to you. No wonder the arrogant corporation counted on the fact that most people are too indifferent, unconcerned, distracted, or lazy to learn what they need to know to survive within this system. We have been conditioned to let the government do our thinking for us. Now's the time to turn that around if we intend to help save our republic and ourselves before it's too late. As an instrument of the international bankers, the all capital letter United States owns you from birth to death. It also holds ownership of all of your assets, all of your property, and even your children. Think long and hard about all the bills, taxes, fines, and licenses you have paid or have purchased. Yes, they had you by the pockets. If you don't believe it, read the 14th Amendment. See how free you really are. Ignorance of the facts led to your silence. Silence is construed as consent. Consent to be beneficiaries of a debt you did not incur. As a sovereign people, we have been deceived for hundreds of years. We think we are free, but in truth, we are servants of the corporation. Congress committed treason against the people in 1871. Honest men could have corrected this fraud and treason. But apparently, there weren't enough honest men to counteract the lust for money and power. We have lost more freedom than we will ever know thanks to corporate infiltration of our so-called government. Do you think that any soldier who died in any of our wars would have fought if he or she had known the truth? Do you think that one person would have laid down his or her life for a corporation? How long will we remain silent? How long will we perpetrate the myth that we are free? When will we stand together as one sovereign people? When will we take back what was stolen from us? And in closing, I would like to ask the final question. If the people of America had known to what extent their trust was betrayed, how long would it have taken for a real revolution to occur? What we need now is a revolution in thought. We need to change our thinking. Then we can change our world. All children deserve their rightful legacy, the liberty our ancestors fought to preserve, the legacy of a sovereign and fully free people. If we do not learn from the past, we'll be doomed to repeat it. I'd like to thank everyone for watching The Act of 1871.
We back. Now, if you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand and keep in mind that we're offering our articles this evening, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the Commerce Game, How to Play, as well as the Secrets of America. Now, the young man put some things in very, very important perspective, and but what I want the Moors to know, and it's been brought out here this evening, this applies to Americans. Europeans, they have everything to do with you. Forget about how to master rights, okay? Learn law, master law, defend yourself with law, okay? All that going up and down, well, I know my rights. What rights are you referring to is what I'm trying to figure out. Now, let's deal with something else. We're going to deal with this Social Security card thing. And let's pay close attention. Now, if you got any questions, go ahead and raise your hand, okay? We'll open up the lines so that you can get in.
George.
The first name.
Father.
The father's first name.
Carlton.
How may I help you?
All right. I just had a general question about me being a holder of a Social Security card.
Uh-huh.
Could you address any questions based on that?
Yes.
Okay. I'm authorized to use the card, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Social Security is the entity that granted the authorization to use the card?
Yes.
Okay. So this makes me aware, as I have been aware for quite some time now, that it's unusual for me to realize this. There's an agency that results as a result of me being a holder of the card and using the card. So I'm aware of the agency, and I just wanted to speak concerning that to maybe have an effect of where it would be reflected on the record that I'm acting as an agent in regards to the use of that card and the information appearing on the card. That information derives from a birth certificate. As all the questions you've asked me appears on the birth certificate.
Yes, sir.
And so it's been expressed to me by the Trinidad and Tobago Embassy that document, the birth certificate, is not personal identification.
No.
It's not information. The information on that document does not personally identify the person who is authorized to use that document.
Yes, it is.
Excuse me?
Yes, it is.
The information appearing on the document?
On the birth certificate?
Yes, yes, that person is authorized to use that information. The holder of the birth certificate is authorized to use the birth certificate
for certain proof.
For whatever it's legally can be used for.
Yes.
That person's use of that document is authorized.
Yes.
So that's an agency again. That's the primary agency.
Yes, the Department of Vital Records.
Right, and so I'm aware of the agency that exists in relationship between me as a man and the information that appears on these documents. This is legal information. And that my use of any information, such as a Social Security number, in conjunction with the name appearing thereon, will be used only within the bounds of that agency, meaning I will be operating as one that is authorized to use the information appearing on the Social Security card and nothing more. My understanding is that people that I know, my parents, my friends, my family, they hold the same document that I'm holding. They have a Social Security card, but they operate in a way where they assume liability in that they create debts. They work for the money, usually to gain employment. A Social Security number must be disclosed.
Yes.
And for the purposes of reporting to the Social Security Administration and the IRS.
Correct.
I've spoken
under a number. You're not under a name. You're under a number.
Right. So I've spoken to the IRS with the same conversation I'm having with you now concerning the use of this name in the public. So when I use the name with that number, there are certain liabilities that are created that will be reported under the information or that name. But now, unlike most people, I do not want to work for money. I want to work for free. And this is a spiritual conviction and a religious conviction and a duty that I'm bound to, that I should live a life of charity and give it my all, give everything of me, give everything of myself freely, and basically give it as a gift, not from me, but from my maker. So I don't want to work for the money, but however, employers require a Social Security number and the name. Basically, they require the information that appears on the Social Security card. So being that the employers require this information, I'm authorized to use that information to give the employer for the purposes of the employer. But it's not within my interest to draw or create any debts with that information, because I'm giving the information to an employer. It's not to say, I want to create debts in this name. The employer creates the debt because they are required by law to issue a paycheck. But because I don't want to accept the paycheck, I want to work for free, I want to find out if there's a way I can arrange where if there's anything, any funds paid to that name, that it could be either deposited directly with Social Security, because I've already established an account for pay.gov to have 100% net pay deposited to the Bureau of Public Debt to pay down on the national debt. So this is what I've arranged in order for me not to just have the funds sitting there. I'll return the funds back to the federal government to pay down on the national debt. So I'm not claiming that I'm taking money through that name or creating liabilities through that name, because I'm just authorized to use the name. I'm like an agent, and an agent is not responsible for his actions unless he acts outside of his capacity as an agent. Therefore, the acts of the agent are done on behalf of the principal. Now, if you're telling me that Social Security is the principal or the federal government is the principal because they have granted the authority and authorized me to use this information, and if there's any debts or liabilities created in this name.
Under the Social Security number.
Right. Then I do not volunteer, I'm not volunteering to assume the responsibility of any liabilities or debts created in that name. That's all I'm saying. So
you have an ID debt.
Say that again?
It's only under identification debt. You have an ID debt.
I don't understand.
If someone has stole your identification.
Right.
That's the only way you won't be responsible.
No, I'm saying I'm not volunteering to take the responsibility for something that I'm authorized to use. Because I'm just the agent, and under the law of agency, the principal is liable for the acts of the agent.
Okay, but how can I help you, Mr. Jones?
I just wanted to have that reflected on my account as opposed to the majority of other people's accounts, that they are not acting as an agent in respect to the use of that card and the information appearing thereon. I am acting as an agent and signing as an agent in conjunction with the use of the information appearing on that Social Security card. So I'm not claiming that the card is mine, because on the back of the card it said it belongs to the Social Security Administration. So it doesn't belong to me. I'm holding property as a trustee, and I will act as a trustee. I will not act as if, you know, this is my document here, because I can get in trouble if I just do anything I feel I can do. So I know it's not my thing, so I have to act responsibly using a Social Security card, giving Social Security information, which is a number, to people, but I'm doing it with my rights reserved and not breaching any fiduciary duty or any duty as a trustee under that authorization to use that card. So when I sign based on my actions of using the card, I signed as authorized. That my signature is now an authorized signature. Most people, they just put a signature. I'm stating on the signature line that it's an authorized signature. I spoke to the bank on the personal checks. On personal checks, the signature is an authorized signature on the personal checks. But most people are not aware of this. The account holder's name appears on the check on the upper left-hand corner. But when the check is signed, it's signed by someone that is authorized to sign the check. Because it's not a line, it's microprint. And it states authorized signature, authorized signature, authorized signature, over and over. So most people are unaware that what they're signing is upon an authorized signature line for the account holder. And so that's another evidence of an agent capacity, an agency created there. But because of people's ignorance of this, or they're not aware, they act and they sign outside of their capacity as agent, and therefore legally become liable. Because once the agent acts outside of his capacity as an agent, he bears the liability, not the principal. But as long as he stays within his agency, the principal bears the liabilities. So this is the point that I'm making, that my use of the Social Security card for quite some time now, and even now, and I will say, God willing, until the day I die, will be appropriate use of that card, which is I will be using it within the agency under which I'm granted the authority to use that card.
4-1. You guys are catching on, aren't you?
Like a ping pong.
When I read a when I read a contract now, or an offer from a corporation who may have court at the end of their corporation status, you can see the contract sticking out blatantly. You can see them now. When you look at stuff, when you read something, read what they're saying. You got to read between the lines. You got to pick the words out. Okay? Everything is an offer. Everything is in commerce. Me standing here right now, I'm conducting commerce because I'm breathing and burning up calories, and I need some farmer to grow some groceries because I'm going to need some nourishment. I need a bottled water company to be putting water in the bottle or getting it into a pipe here. We're conducting commerce every time we breathe. Okay? Now, there's some really good corporations that got into position that they can take the interest from the principal without repayment of the interest to the principal. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
And charge us a little bit for every time we breathe. That's the way it is. You want to stay alive, you're going to pay. Sad. It's really sad that we've come to this point. The good news is that now that we understand that, we can... How did they change the Constitution? What did they add to the end of it?
Four.
Amendments.
Oh.
So they changed the contract, didn't they? They added amendments. So when we get a contract from, say, a foreign entity, is it possible to change a contract with amendments?
Yeah.
It is. So who is the only person that can change the contract?
We're the people.
It's you.
Right.
Not even we. It's you. This is all happening on a single basis. Okay? So if you can amend the contract and send it back to them, they have the right to counterclaim. And the last truth shot back in the form of an affidavit on amendment settles the deal. Done. Did you send the last paperwork off before the court? No, I'm talking about when they ruled dismissal. You were the last guy to fire your affidavit. You was. He just proved it. Anybody that's won here knows that they were the last person to put something into the court. If first guy to walk away from the battlefield, what?
Loses.
That's the way it is. You skate off the ice rink first, you lost. Now, we may not have ice skates, okay? But when they come by, grab one of those hockey sticks and start using it. Okay? You don't have to move around. You can just take out a few guys. I'm not saying it's fair, but they haven't been fighting fair for a long time either.
For educational purposes only.
And I'm not talking violence here. I'm talking video games. In addition, the Secretary of State retains domestic responsibilities that Congress entrusted to the State Department in 1789. These include the custody of the Great Seal of the United States.
Wow.
The preparation of certain presidential proclamations, the publication of treaties and international acts, as well as the official record of the foreign relations of the United States, and the custody of certain original treaties and international agreements. The Secretary also serves as the channel of communication between the federal government and the states, and the extradition of fugitives to or from foreign countries. Now, I was a fugitive about 4 months ago, okay? And they wanted to bring me into the United States for a trial. And I told them I didn't want to go. Told them I didn't want to consent to extradition to the United States. Now, that all happened within about 3 inches. There was a ship there. They pulled up their pirate ship right in front of me, and there's a gate to go into the pirate ship. And I said, hey, I'm going to stay over here on my ship. I don't want to get on your ship. And they said, well, if you don't get on our ship, we're going to charge you more, and we're going to throw you in jail for a longer time. And I said, well, look, I don't like boating. This isn't my kind of boating, okay? I just as soon stay over here. Is that okay? And they said, well, you can stay over there if you want, but you need to sign this paper. And I said, what's that paper? And it says a consent to waive my rights. I'm not kidding. That's what it said right on the top.
Oh.
I looked at that and I go, oh. So I just handed it back to him. I said, I'm going to go ahead and pass on that. I think I'll keep the rights that I got. I don't feel very comfortable with them because I don't know that you are going to observe them. But I'm going to go ahead and stand over here with my rights, and you stand over there with your guns and your pirate ship and your big cannons and your flag flying. And I understand that all these greenbacks, oh, no, they're not greenbacks. Darn, they're Federal Reserve notes. All these in my pocket really belong to you. And I realize that every time I transfer them to someone else for barter, that I owe you something for that. I agree. It's a bad position I'm in. But I just found out that they were created by me, and you guys just borrowed them from me. So let me say you just go ahead and credit the account for me. How's that work? Is anybody excited about that?
Yeah.
I looked at, for entertainment purposes only, that's how it's supposed to work because we're foreign. Now, if you're not foreign and you're a U.S. citizen, we still like you. I was once one too. So when you guys are reading stuff, it's so convoluted. Everything is so convoluted because attorneys with law degrees really have English grammar degrees. Okay? If you don't know what subrogation means, you're in big trouble. If you don't understand that word, if you don't understand rogatory, if you don't understand simple terminology words that we hear every day, if you don't understand exactly what they mean, you're going to enter into a contract that you can't get out of mentally, and they will beat you. Okay? Now, I'm really proud of some people that are here tonight because we've had some really great victories. Okay? We've had some really good victories here. And I would love to share them with you. There's one brutal case that's in a manila envelope. And I know someday when the Republic is rolling, we'll be able to pull that out and show that this was a hinge pin on the turning of their eyes to see who we are. Because we can do this peacefully. We don't have to go out and get ugly. We can respect our brothers who are still U.S. citizens. We can protect their rights until they understand that they don't have any. And then maybe they'll want to go down to Walmart and refund their benefits and privileges for real rights and duties. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
All right. This is the history and the duties. And I want to go down at the bottom of the page, well, medium of the page, it says the Secretary of State also commissions notaries, public, registers lobbyists. How about that? Does anybody know what a lobbyist is? How about that, huh? They're telling you right there, it's okay, bring your checkbook, come on down here, register with us, and we'll get you hooked up with a favorite senator or representative from your favorite state, and maybe you can get some stuff your way if you got a big enough checkbook, because you're a lobbyist. They got to register right here. You guys can't believe that, can you? They register at the Secretary of State's office. I wonder if they have to pay to register.
I'm sure.
I wonder how much they pay to register.
It depends on how much they earn.
How about that? Okay. Registers charitable organizations. Do you guys know any charitable organizations?
Church.
How about, yeah, I didn't say that word because I don't want to offend anybody. But a charitable organization that needs a tax deduction. Wow. Telemarketers. Hey, let's put them in the same group. That'll work. Distributes copies of all new state laws to the public as requested. And who's the public? Anybody standing around, right? It's all of us. I mean, that's kind of a conglomeration of citizens of both sides of the group. Compiles and publishes the administrative rules of the state's agencies, issues certificates of trademarks and trade names. Now, let me ask you this. If you go in and ask for a license, what are you doing? You're giving them your rights in exchange for a benefit, right? So if you're going to go in and get a trademark, and they give you that trademark, who does the trademark belong to?
Yeah.
So if you got a corporation with a trademark, guess who owns your corporation? How about that? Sad, isn't it? All righty. Files all secured financial transactions. Secured or unsecured? Who are you today?
Secured.
Yeah, we're all secured party. My friend calls it the secured credit partiers. Doesn't that sound like a great party? I like that. Okay, and they file all those secured financial transactions under the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, do you remember the word understand, what that means, to stand under?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what are they filing all that stuff under? The Uniform Commercial Code. Notices of appointments of officials and members of boards of commissions and commissioners, and commissions made by the governor, and files contribution and expense reports for all state and federal candidates and political organizations. The Secretary of State has had nothing to do for the last 200 years. So they gave him a little bit to do. And why doesn't the Secretary of State have anything to do? Because there's not much foreign going on in Arizona until March 3rd, 2010. Is this cool, guys? You see what happened? They painted us into a corner, and we haven't turned around and looked. But in the corner, there's a door. The door opens out. So as they're painting us into the corner, they don't want to paint us in too tight. And they did this last little recession that we've had. There's a lot of us that are going, hey, I don't like this corner. I mean, when you get up off your knees, you bump your head into the doorknob. Open the door. This is it. This is just one. Remember, we went over the District of Columbia Act of 1781. I'm sorry, 1871. We went over the Zip Code Act. All these things that they're passing on us. Are you guys? Isn't this exciting?
Yeah.
This is so cool because we don't have to do what they're doing. We don't have to do what we've done our whole life. We can stand up and change position. All right, Secretary of State issues numerous publications, including the Arizona Constitution, the Arizona Administration Register, the Arizona Administrative Code, the Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, and that, by the way, you're the tenant. I don't care if you own your property. You know that now.
Right.
Okay, and guess who the landlord is? The state. That's why you pay rent to him every year in the form of a benefit. You'd call it a tax if you want. They call it benefits. You might as well start looking things the way they look at them. Okay. Now, the Notary Public References Manual. And it goes on to say that it's kind of under the Uniform Commercial Code. Lobbyist handbooks, bingo law. How about that? There's another gamble. Bingo. And lobbyists. The laws concerning trade names and trademarks and limited partnerships. The publicity pamphlets. General elections. How about that? They're even into the elections to make sure everything's fair.
Yeah.
In each even-numbered year and many other pamphlets and booklets. I looked up the word commission because we think commission means something. I mean, how many people want to take a guess at what commission means before we read it? The act of granting certain powers or the authority to carry out a particular task or duty. The authority so granted. The matter or task so authorized. Investigation of fraud was their commission. A document conferring such authorization. Okay, so they give the commission, the Secretary of State gives commission to the notary. So when we use a notary, we're using that to go into the private to take care of business. Without a notary, you might as well forget it. They're not going to look at you. You can't speak. You got your lips sewed up. You need to get in there and start cutting those strings open so that you can talk. Secretary of State is the key between America and the United States. How about that?
Right.
Oh. All right.
Okay, Moses, we're back. And what we're going to be doing now is a little bit later on, we're going to go back down into the courtroom. And deal with what to say in there and all of this good stuff. I got a call on the line. Let me open up the line. Area code 347. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 347. 347. Okay. All right. We're back. Let's go back down in here, and we're going to deal with advocate and revocate. Find out what that's all about. Okay? So y'all sit
okay, having a good time tonight?
Yeah.
Any first timers here? Raise your hand so I know who not to talk to. All right, first timer, 1, 2, 3, 4. Welcome. Nice to have you all here. My name's Billy. Bill for short, Bill for long, nothing more, nothing less. We're going to go over some executor things, and that has to do with estates. And it's if you guys don't understand that yet, we can get into it a little bit after the meeting, just a little bit so you understand. So I don't want to lose you. But a few years ago, approximately on your birth date, there was a death. Your birth certificate is the proof of that death. Anything spelled in all capital letters name, if you look up definitions into the U.S. code, it says that it is a deceased or a vessel. It can be any of those things, or a corporation. The word corporation, we know, comes from the word corpse, which means a dead thing. So as we learn these terminologies and what they really mean and how they apply to our life, it's really great to understand the word executor. Now, I like to call it an executor because they execute things. They execute plans. They execute problems. And I'm just going to go on a little bit about this and read it to you so you understand. And if you are a secured party creditor or a principal, this is really good information so that you understand how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. It says, it's both an honor and a burden to serve as someone's executor, as an executor is entrusted with responsibility for winding up someone's earthly affairs, a big or little task depending on the situation. Essentially, an executor is charged with protecting a deceased person's property until all debts and taxes have been paid, and seeing that what's left is transferred to the people who are entitled to it. The law does not require an executor, also called a personal representative, to be a legal or financial expert, but it does require the highest degree of honesty, impartiality, and diligence. This is called the fiduciary duty. The duty to act with scrupulous good faith and honesty on behalf of someone else. Executors have a number of duties, depending on the complexity of the deceased person's financial and family circumstances. Typically, an executor must, and I'm just going to go over the all bold things here, find the deceased person's assets and manage them until they are distributed to inheritors. Decide whether or not probate court proceedings are needed. Figure out who inherits property. File the will in the local probate court. Handle day-to-day details. Set up an estate bank account. Use estate funds to pay continuing expenses, pay debts, pay taxes, and supervise the distribution of the deceased person's property. That sounds very boring, doesn't it? I mean, it's just kind of a bummer. But what if, for entertainment purposes only, we were talking about your legal entity? Your name, in all capital letters, is an entity. Some refer to a trust. So if that legal entity died at birth, and you've been walking along not understanding that there is a large fortune there for you to take care of all the issues that we just talked about, wouldn't that be great if you were the executor?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say we read this again with that in context. I find out that the heir to all of this wealth, because I was born in America, has been given to a trustee that may fall under a heading of U.S., and they have been acting as the executor because I'm not old enough to understand all that. Let's say I'm a juvenile delinquent, like they call me in Title 18, because I haven't stepped up to the plate and said, hey, I'm the executor, and I'm going to do some things here to show that. Let's say I revoke power of attorney, and I appoint myself as the settlor. Doesn't that sound good? And now I'm going to settle all the things that are required, and I'm going to do them with honesty, impartiality, and diligence. So the first thing I want to do is I want to notify the Social Security Administration that the guy that they're representing died. And now I need to notify maybe some alphabet companies, corporations that are saying that there's some debt owed to, maybe taxes. So I would open up an account so that I could affect payment to all those entities. Does that make sense? This is exciting stuff because the accounts are real and the players are all real and the actors are real and they're real matrix. So now if we pay off all the taxes in, let's say, an executor situation where there was a trust and the person died, that would be the testator. Okay, so the testator is gone, and we need to settle up. Because as soon as we get all the taxes paid, and we get all the debt paid, now there's some extra things that we need to do. We need to find out who the beneficiaries are. I like that. Because I would like to be the beneficiary. And as the executor, we get to appoint that. Now, if we figure out that the dead guy, the testator, has some property, we'll be able to claim that too. Now, has anybody ever heard of a property list attachment A? Raise your hand. Oh, there's a lot of us out here. So we already know what the property is. Giggle, giggle. We also need to notify the probate court. Now, that's going to be real easy because all the courts in this government corporate venue are probate courts. Every one of them. Now, that's really good news because we don't have to go looking for one. They're all there. Now, you might get a notice every once in a while. It's an offer to pay some taxes at, say, a traffic place or a magistrate place. All those things are already in place for us to go present that we are the executor for the trust and we want to settle up. Now, there's 10 rules of commerce. I've talked about this a bunch. You can buy it online if you pull up the Google and search for it, 10 rules of commerce. There are a few copies floating around in this building I know of if you want to borrow it and watch it. But the first rule of commerce is that you cannot control that which you did not create. Second rule is you can only control that which you create. The third rule, this is really cool. Are you liking this, Matt? This is really good stuff. It's so simple. And they give us manuals called executor manuals so that you can understand how to handle your estate. The third rule is that you cannot interfere with commerce. And I'm getting real close to it right now. So I'm going to be real careful that I don't interfere with commerce with anyone in here that may be a U.S. citizen. Because if you want to be a U.S. citizen, we're all for that. That's great. There's a whole bunch of us in here that are not U.S. citizens. I don't want to get too far out of the line there. But an MSO is a title. Everybody here gave up title to something along the way. If you have a driver's license, you gave up title to travel. If you have a license plate on the back of your car, you turned it into a vehicle when you did that, and you gave up title. And by giving up title, you give up the rights and the profits from that for a benefit and privilege. So the thing that scares a lot of people is they get really depressed about all this and say, well, I gave up everything. How do I get it back? So I did another word study. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about regaining title. Okay, let's show you what a title really looks like. This is, says a certificate of live birth that was printed up at the hospital and they send it off. It's a little card and they make it smaller so that it fits really nice on top of a securities instrument. A securities instrument, you can tell is a securities instrument because it has this really nice border around the outside edge. At the very bottom of this one, does it have a bond company? At the bottom of my birth certificate, they hid it in the scroll, that really nice border that has all the fancy penmanship, all that stuff. Mine is hid in there. In fact, I got one from the county, and I got one from the state, and they bonded it through two different securities companies, corporations. One of them was American Bond and Note Company, and the other one was a Midwest Bank and Note Company. So just for fun, I looked at an old one, and it says Pacific Bond Company. So there's a guy named D, and I think his middle initial is T, and his last name is CC. So that's the guy that's got your stuff. Yeah, DT CC. And you can do that all with capital letters and Google it, and you can see where DTCC lives. It's an international entity. It's pretty neat when you guys want to really get into this and understand who you are and what they've done for us. Now, I got to tell you, they've done a great job in some aspects of providing some serious funding and benefits because of this certificate. That's a routing number. That's one of the presidents right there that set up all this corporate stuff. Do you guys know that in 1760, they had way more knowledge, the average family had way more knowledge about corporate law, contract law, and trust law than even some of the best paid attorneys today have? When they came to America, they came here for freedom, and they came here to retain titles. They didn't want anybody telling them that they couldn't speed on their horse because they had the title to their horse. They had a brand on it. They didn't want to be told that they couldn't plant crops in their yard or have a certain color paint on their house. They came here for freedom. But they came here for respect for each other. So if old George Washington wanted to paint his barn yellow, I'd let him. And I would uphold his right to have a yellow barn instead of complain about it and go to the, what are those, HOAs, Homeowners Association, and complain about it and try and get his yellow paint removed. There's a big responsibility to have that kind of authority, and there's also a big responsibility to uphold someone else's authority. So I'm just touched on that for a minute. Titles. Now, the executor, I looked up some words to go with executor. This is what the noun says. You got it? It says, the person appointed to administer the estate of a person. Does anybody know what person means? Say it.
Corporation.
Corporation. Who has died, leaving a will, and that's mean, the will, that means like my will. My will to be here tonight, I was here. His will is to eat shrimp. So he has a will. That's what we mean by when we say will. Which nominates, I like the word nominate, I nominate me to be wealthy. Second it? My wife gave me a second. All opposed? Nobody opposed? The ayes have it. Unless there is a valid objection, the judge will appoint the person named in the will to be the executor. Now, here's what's crazy. If nobody appoints an executor to an estate, the state appoints one for you. Now, a lot of times that could be, say, an attorney. It could be a prosecuting attorney. It could be the judge. It could actually be the clerk of the court. It may be an administrator for an alphabet company. It's kind of like hide the pea under the shell game. When you get there, you go, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? Hey, I'm a sovereign. I have rights. I have this. I have that. Really? Where's your executor? What's that? I'll point him. Okay, you're going to jail. Great. That quick. Bang. You're in. Okay, and they administer your will while you're in there. Now, that's really great because they're digging into your account. Is this cool?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go on a little farther. The executor must ensure that the person's desires expressed in the will are carried out. Practical responsibilities including gathering up and protecting the assets of the estate. Have you done all you can do to gather up one on it? That's really good news for anybody that doesn't have that done, because if I can tell you I did it, you can do it. If little old Bill right here can figure this stuff out, little O, you can do too. It's really great. Okay, so now that we got protecting the assets of the estate, we need to obtain information in regarding to all beneficiaries named in the will and any other potential heirs, collecting and arranging for payments of debts of the estate, approving or disapproving creditors' claims. And I got to tell you this, I'm going to approve them all. I don't have any problem. I don't want any controversy. I want to settle it up. The minute they give it to me, I want to accept all claims. Okay? Okay, making sure estate taxes are calculated, forms filed, and tax payments made, and in all ways assist the attorney for the estate, which the executor can select. I pick me because I don't want an attorney at law. I want an attorney in law. See, when you're at the river, you're not really wet. When you're in the river, you're all in. Okay? So we don't want to practice at law. We want to be in law because that's where it's at. When you get in the pool, I'm going to tell you right now, all the rest of the guys at law don't want to get in the pool with you. And if you're the only guy in the pool, there's only one story being told. You guys following me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as we go on, there's some things, words, like I'm getting into this word called advocate. And the word advocate means to speak or write in favor of, support or urge by argument, recommend publicly. And then it gives a sentence, he advocated higher salaries for the teachers. The noun word of advocate is a person who speaks or writes in support or defense of a, what's person?
Corporation,
cause, etc., usually followed by an advocate of peace, a person who pleads for or in behalf of another, or a person who pleads the cause of another in a court of law. Okay, that's an advocate. Now, advocate has the word vocate in it, right? So if we understand revocate, that's the revenue of something. Now, if you hear the word Internal Revenue Service, if we tear down the word Internal Revenue Service, the word revenue stands out like it doesn't even stand out. Revenue. We think it's money. It means the revenue. If you're a musician, you know what a venue is. That's where you're playing. It's a specific thing. To revenue means you move it to somewhere else. So the Internal Revenue Service is taking your money and putting it into another venue. So the word advocate comes also from a word vocate, which means to speak in on behalf of. So if we're going to revocate, comes another word off of that is revocation. So the word revocation means to recall or to call back. To the act of instance of revoking. Now, how can you revoke something? We can't as citizens because we gave up the right to revoke. Right? Only the king can revoke something because he had it in first position. I give something to this gentleman right here and I go, I'm going to revoke your right to use it. Give it back. Well, what if I gave him something, but it was his to begin with. And I say, well, I'm going to revoke your right to travel. You don't have a driver's license. And he says, hey, I gave you the right to revoke, so I'm going to revoke your right to revoke my revoke. Are you seeing what I'm saying? We have the right to travel. We have the right to our personal effects. We have the right, and I like this word, we have the right to travel unfettered. Now, that's almost R-rated right there, unfettered. If anybody ever looks up that word, it's a great word, unfettered.
Harassed?
That's right. It's even worse than harassed. It's beheld. Okay. How can they pay you if they've held you against your will? How can they pay you back for the time you lost? They can't. 10 minutes is gone. You can't pay me back that. So, revocation. Revocation of power of attorney. Now, there's a nice sling of words all together, isn't it? Revocation of power of attorney. So let's go down the chain of events. Your parents got married. They gave up their right to all they are going to accumulate in the wording of the license of marriage. They gave it to the state. Remember how the state sounds a lot like estate? Okay. So now that they've given up all their rights to all their property, their children, anything that they accrue, under that marriage they've agreed to give up to the state. Now, when mom goes down and has the baby at the hospital, they won't let usually the dad sign the birth certificate because there would be two signatures on there. It would be twice as hard for them to prove this all in all later. But mom turns into a informant, and she gives up right and title to the child. That's why they take that birth certificate and send it off. The live birth lets them know there's a new estate being put into the system. So that goes to, this is crazy, it goes to the Treasury through the DTCC, and that is turned into a security, and income or outgo goes into the system on your behalf. So now mom has just given up title to the child, and by giving up title, she gave power of attorney to the state to handle all your affairs. Excuse me, the child's affairs. I don't want to insult anyone. Now, if you don't revoke that power of attorney, if I give him over here the power of attorney in my affairs, and I go to court, and I start yelling and screaming, and he just sits there, and the judge says, where's the power, where's the man who has power of attorney? And let's say the prosecution stands up and goes, we agree to go to jail and to pay a fine of $15,000 and pay back the estate for this gentleman. How can I argue with that? I gave him power of attorney. You see that? I can't argue with somebody that I gave power of attorney unless I revoke the power of attorney. Are you guys catching all this? Now, as we get older, we sign some other contracts. We give up power of attorney to our right to travel, to the officer, to the court, to the judge, to the clerk of the court. We give up power of attorney there. When we get old enough to have maybe a job, when I was younger, it was when you started working, 12, 13 years old, you went and got a Social Security number. So you gave up power of attorney to your estate's income, and turn everything that you make into a taxable event. I like that. That's what I was looking for. A taxable event. So realistically, everything that we spend to any government agency is a tax. And we have given up power of attorney to argue any points. These guys that go into court and argue about tax law 28 and section code 15 and USC, all of it, it doesn't matter. You're not there as an attorney. You have to hire an attorney because you gave up power of attorney. So when we learn how to start revoking their authority that we gave them, because they can only have something that was given to them. Remember that. You cannot create something bigger than yourself. So if they have the power or the authority to throw someone in jail, we have the power and authority to throw someone in jail. And if we gave them the power to do that, we can revoke that power. You guys following along with this okay?
Mm-hmm.
So revocation, a power of attorney, revocation of a driver's license. Now, here's the cool part. The Alphabet Group will say DMV, IRS, CIA, some of those other Alphabet groups. Whenever they act like they're in charge, they're only in charge by our either acquiescence or by our permission. So whenever they pass a law, act, slash, because there are no laws since 1933, remember that, there is no money. There are no laws. We're all acting under public policy. Whenever they pass a policy or an act, they have to give us remedy for the real man to get out of playing in the play. So there are lots and lots of forms that I've been finding on the internet under the IRS subsection that give us the power to revoke almost everything that they're doing. Isn't that great?
Awesome.
So we don't have to argue anymore. We don't have to go in as a debtor. We can go in as a creditor. Now, if has anybody ever been in bankruptcy court, just raise your hand real slow. Probably because people owe you money. But is it better to go in as a debtor or as a creditor?
Creditor.
And what's the job of the trustee for the bankruptcy for the estate that's bankrupt? To find out who the creditors are. That way they get paid. That's the deal. They don't really care who the debtors are because the debtors are indebted to a debtor. So if you walked in and you had a sign on that said, debtor, right here on your chest, and the judge says, okay, we're going to find out who the creditors are so they can get paid, you could go, right here. How about that? I'm no longer the debtor, I'm the creditor. And it looks like a corporation with two initials are the debtors, and I would like them to go ahead and pay me. And I'd like to use some of those alphabet guys over there to go collect it for me. Has anybody ever thought of that? There's a whole nother playing field. There's an old theory that there could be two complete planets operating in unison, right on top of each other, parallel. That you couldn't see, parallel, right on top of each other, because the molecular structure of wood is not the same as air, and they can pass through each other. So what if we were operating in a matrix right now, and as soon as you found out that you could pass out of where we're living right now and start flying in a whole other dimension, wouldn't you be interested in doing that?
Yeah.
And my answer is yes. This is great. I had an experience the other day. I went to a court and went in to file some paperwork. This is some funny stuff. I've been sent a notice saying that somebody was suing me. It was a credit card company. And they were looking for some money. Now, I know there ain't no money, so I was willing to settle with them. However, they didn't have the feeling that I had about money, and so they filed a small claims against me. Now, this is all great. No big deal. So I beat him in this one court. Because I beat him, the judgment went for three times the amount plus punitive damages. So instead of them getting $2,000, I'm owed $76,000. But the court says, well, it's in small claims, so we got to get it out of here. And besides, we know Bill, and we don't want that in our court. So they send it off to the Superior Court. So I get a notice from the Superior Court, if you want to continue with this case, you need to come down here and pay $168. Extortion, excuse me. Fraud, excuse me. A fee for educational purposes only. Thank you for that. So I go down there and I stand in line behind a whole bunch of slaves. I didn't see the king's line anywhere. I asked for it. I said, hey, do I have to wait in this line? I'm not one of them. They said, yeah, just for a minute. And I said, okay, I'll respect the time of my brothers. So when I got to the counter, I said, hey, I got this notice and it's bothering me. She goes, why is it bothering you? I said, because I'm the respondent. And according to the rules of procedure, a respondent doesn't have to pay to prove his innocence. Now, whoever brought the controversy also must bring the remedy. That's law. That's law as a maxim. So I said, so I want you to go ahead and open up a file on this for me. So she reads it. She goes, oh, no, I can't do that. You have to pay $168. I said, well, if it says there that I get $1 million if I win, do it. Because I can write that in right now. I'll just write it on there. She goes, no. What I meant was if you want to pursue this, you have to pay $168. And I said, well, I really didn't want to do this. But if you're not going to go ahead and charge the credit card company.
Okay, Moles. I'm going to open up Round Bread 1. Round Bread 1, come on in. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, Ella, I'm calling from England, London.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just my old Skype number. But my name is Emperor Johannes. Hi. Okay. Yeah, and I was listening to the program and the recording, and I got information to make it very easier. I don't know about your audience or if they understand what the person or the guy or the man is saying fully, or if there's a way that they could really understand it straightforward, not try to go and review or research or even all of this stuff to just to get a straight understanding on what he's actually saying. So the basic thing to actually, if you call it freedom, because there ain't no real such thing as freedom, because everyone is still under a house. So the basic thing to get out of the actual corporation, the world that has been embodied in a person or a fiction, the only way to get out of it real quick, and I mean like ASAP, he was talking about a birth certificate. Well, a certificate is just a receipt, basically. So it's like they first of all, they wrote down your birth record because everything has been recorded from the beginning of time. So if you know the actual law, there's law has been recorded, regardless of if you're telling if you have your own opinion, there is facts, because facts are actual statements that has been recorded. So again, everything has a record. You can't ask for a certificate because they will just give you another receipt. So if you want everything to stop, so all the problems that you guys are having over there, because I'm just starting to make my younger children, you know, make sure that they know exactly what's going on, that they could stop these things ASAP. I just came back in, like, as in, you could say reincarnation, just like my mind just opened up and like got so much information, and I'm like starting like the whole, you could call it revolution, but the whole understanding of where are we coming from and where we're at now. So I'm saying, because they will, and if you try, they will obviously not allow you to get your birth records, and you will think, what's the purpose if it's yours, actual birth records? Everything on there is yours, so you have the right and privilege to get back your record. So, you know, all of those things that he's saying is true. So everything that's on your birth records, it could tell you where you're coming back from, the time your actual birth line has been around. So if you believe that we're kings and queens, then if you get your birth record, it will tell you exactly where you're coming from. Because remember, we have been traveling. So if you could go back to slavery then, or before slavery, remember, they always had a receipt on where everyone go. It doesn't matter if you're white or black, but they always have a receipt. So it's just like you're traveling through the airport. They always have a recording of where everyone go. So you could always call up the records. It's just like in when you go into a court, the judges and that, they know the law records. So they could give you a legislation. But if you ask for the record, the law record, they would have to close the court, because the law record states something else other than the legislation they're giving you. But obviously they don't want you to know about the record, because the record have the truth on it and everything else that's on it. So yeah, the simplest thing, the easiest way to get out of all these things and without going through all the terminology is to get the record. And the record states everything from the beginning of time till now. So nothing has not been lost. Everything is still there. It's just like the Bible, whatever, you know, historical thing you have, they create a copy of it. It doesn't mean that they have distorted the real version. They just made their own version and put whatever they want in there. But the original version always around. It's just like they were saying that they've been finding all these, you know, scrolls and all these things, so it's never gone. It's just like, it's just that they create their own version, because they had the privilege of fighting wars. Because everywhere each individual are, say it's either called a realm or a colony, and a company is a military you know, unit, basically. So a realm or a colony UN is a military unit. So everything is a military. That's why they use sir and mister and missus, all these things. So we're just in a military unit, because again, this is how the emperor created his constitution. under the battles that's going on. It's way. It's like it's on all different levels. But if you get the record, your birth record, not your birth certificate, then you will know exactly. It will have everything on there, every single thing.
How do you think we ought to go about getting a hold of that birth record?
Yeah. The same place that they give you your certificate, because they hold the original. Because for them to give you a certificate, they must have your record.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry. So I was saying, yeah, exactly. But again, because we haven't really asked for it over like a 1,000 years or so, they're going to be ignorant on that point. But when more people ask for it, the more demanding, and obviously when it gets spotlight, they don't want the too much attention on others knowing that, you know, there's something going on. And as I say, all the wars, they don't have to be no wars when you're asking for something that's already yours. So there can't be no dispute. But because, you know, they have been holding it for so long, they will feel that ignorance to say, okay, they're just coming up with an idea, but they know what's going on, but they're trying to, you know, baffle their way out of it, everything. But if more people ask for it, everything will be over quicker than it's supposed to be. You could always go back to learning when everything is in accordance, is in peaceful, and when all the laws that's come back, the original laws that's always been here, has come back to the original things, then you will have time to go through all these journeys that we've left, and so we could go, you know, we could go forward. You know, if you want to go forward or backwards, it's still the same parallel where we're going in. But it's the records. Yeah, they don't want you to know, but it's the actual records.
Okay, well, I certainly appreciate you calling in and bringing us up to speed to that.
Yeah,
and thank you so much.
You know, that's fine. I'll keep listening to the recording, because it's very informational as well.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Moore, we're back. Young man out of over there in England, and appreciate that bit of information. We're gonna go back over here. And I hope you all paid attention to what he was saying. That's been very interesting, and I got to go down there and check that out. But anyway, we're going to go to part two and finish up on this Social Security card, man. And I had to go back and get the plug. I thought I had it. I didn't, and so that's why I couldn't go directly to it. But if you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll recognize them and open up the line. Okay?
Bing. Or volunteering to assume any liabilities as a result of my use of the card, my legal use of the card, within the agency of my use of the card. And so, if there's a way that Social Security can maybe take note of that, or make some sort of arrangement where, you know, because, like I said, I don't work for money. I don't have money or liabilities in that name. I don't want money. The gas company wants money. The merchants and the vendors, they want money.
Demo
is the only entity that prints money or has issued money through the Federal Reserve, but any debts or liabilities created under the Social Security number I'm given, I can't pay the liabilities. So how is Social Security going to take care of that situation where the name that I have not volunteered to assume to be responsible?
If you want to put a block on your Social Security number, you can do so.
No, no, I don't. Why would I want to do that?
But you want to protect your Social Security number.
No, I don't want to do that. I'm just, you know, making it known that I'm not volunteering.
Are you applying for anything?
No, I'm calling to have it reflected on my record that I'm not volunteering to assume any liabilities for that name.
It is your name, correct?
Well, it was issued to me, right?
Yes.
So the issuer of a thing is the owner of that thing.
The name and the Social Security number.
Trust.
That's the name that appears on your birth certificate.
Right. Those documents, I'm holding those documents in trust. Because those are not my documents. Those documents belong to the agencies that issued them, correct?
Name belongs to
Demo.
It was issued to you.
Well, on the back of the Social Security card, it says it belongs to the Social Security Administration.
If the card is lost, the card is due to be returned back to us.
It says that before.
The card is returned back.
Demo.
And that Social Security number belongs to you. That's your identification to say that that is you.
Well, the Social
the card is issued out. The back of the card states that the card is lost for them to return it back to the Social Security office. That's only if the card is lost.
So,
the card, not the number, the card is on every card.
Right. So when it says this card belongs to the Social Security Administration, you're saying that that's only in the circumstance.
Only the paper card.
Demo.
Only if it's lost.
Only if it's lost.
But if it's in the hands of somebody, it doesn't belong to the federal government. That's not a federal government document.
It is a federal violation if someone uses that Social Security number.
Is that government a personal document?
It's a document. It's a
what type of document is it? Is it a government?
It's a legal document. Stating that it is you. That's your identification.
And is that information registered? Is that document registered? Now, who did the registration? Is the person that holding
it? You applied for the Social Security card.
Excuse me?
When you applied for the card.
Right. Who did the registration? The government did the registration, right?
No, you did.
I don't remember doing a registration on anything.
Who applied for the card?
There was an application, which means a begging and a pleading, and a submission.
How did you get your Social Security number?
Through submission, property, and total ownership of the property.
Sir, why are you talking like this?
Because this is legal. This is legal things we're talking about. This is legal. This is legal jargon I'm talking, because this is a legal document.
It's your identification.
Right, but it's a legal document.
Yes, it is.
So that's why I have to speak in legal terms concerning.
You don't speak in legal terms, though.
Well, if the Social Security Administration and the federal government is not claiming that that document is a government issued document,
it is a government issued document. You are the owner of that Social Security number and that name.
The issuer is the owner. In law, an issuer of a document is
the recipient that applies.
Okay, is there any information in my account that states that I claimed ownership of the document?
When you applied for it.
I signed under a statement that said I claim ownership of this document.
That states that you are held responsible for that Social Security number.
I'm held responsible by who?
By the federal government.
So they're the owners.
No, we're not the number. We're not the owners.
So how could I be held responsible that has no business in what I'm using?
The name was given to you.
All right. So somebody gave me something and authorized me to use that thing.
Correct.
So if I'm authorized to do a thing, no. If I'm authorized, it's not mine.
If you lose your card,
because I'm not the authority. I'm not. I would know the number and the name, but I'm not claiming it's mine. There's say that something is mine. If I don't want it to be mine, nobody could say it's mine. If I'm saying that I have something and I'm saying it's not mine, I'm just using it, nobody by law can force me to say this is mine, because I'm just is either
they're going.
Yes,
there are people that are waiting behind you that need some Social Security information, okay?
Right, but I'm left it on my account. That's what I'm requesting.
Then you need to go into your office and speak to a representative there.
I already did.
Okay, so you did.
So I that's why I'm calling to see if somebody can pull up my account to see that information is reflected in the account.
You need to call us.
So is that information reflected in the account?
When your Social Security number, yes, sir.
The agency?
I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm basically saying I'm not assuming any liabilities under that name.
Who name is it? Is it your name?
No, it's not my name.
And you're an alias?
Not an alias. It's just I'm not obligated to have a name. I'm just a person that doesn't have a name. I use a name, and the name I use is the name that appears on the birth certificate. That was that I've been holding for a very, very, very long time.
That's the name?
Well, that's the name they called me.
Okay.
And that's the name that appears on this legal document.
Like everyone else. You know,
it's a name I'm using. I'm using the name, but just because I'm using it,
the name is given to you.
I'm making it clear that I'm not claiming information that appears.
That's the name that's given to you, okay?
Excuse me?
That's the name that's given to you until you expire.
There's no law that says that.
That's the name that's given to you.
There's no law that says that.
By law, that is your name.
What law? What's the name of the law? Vital Statistics Act?
The doctrine of your birth. That's the name that's given to you by your parents.
Where, in the Vital Statistics Act, it says that? What law says that?
This is yours. We got to end this call, okay?
No, you have to prove your claim, termination, to me over the phone.
George,
and I'm asking for verification of your claim so I can have some facts so I can act accordingly. Excuse me? See that? You can't deal with it, son. But he got caught up in their own mouth. They admitted that they authorized use of the name, and that's the evidence of the agency.
Okay, Moles, we back. Very, very interesting. And I'm going to try to finish up on what we was doing yesterday. But before we do, we're going to deal with responding in court.
United States Code, Title 18, and this is Part 3, Chapter 306, Subsection 4108. I'm going to read it to you how most people read it, okay? I'm going to take off my glasses so I can read it again. Prior to the transfer of an offender to the United States, the fact that the offender consents to such transfer and that such consent is voluntary and with full knowledge of the consequences thereof shall be verified in the country in which the sentence was imposed by a United States magistrate judge or by a citizen specifically designated by a judge of the United States as defined in Section 451 of Title 28, United States Code. The designation of a citizen who is an employee or officer or of a department or agency of the United States shall be with the approval of the head of that department or agency. B. The verifying officer shall inquire of the offender whether he understands and agrees that the transfer will be subject to the following conditions.
Huh?
When you read, does anybody understand that?
No.
Okay, so let me tell you who wrote that. A lawyer wrote that, and they wrote it in terminology that we can't understand. And so we don't want to sound stupid, so the judge says, do you understand that? What do you say?
Yes, no.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, you go to court. This is what they're wrapping everybody under their jurisdiction. This is Title 18. I said this to a judge. I said, are you referring to Title 18, Part 3, Subsection 4108? And the judge goes, what are you referring to? And I go, the consent. Because he said, do you understand that you're waiving your rights? And I said, no, I don't understand that. Why would I do that? I want all the rights I can possibly get in this court. I said, are you referring to Title 18? And he looked at me without blinking. And he goes, what part? Well, there's at least 306 parts, chapters, and there's. So here's what I know. in the U.S. Code, under definitions, it says the United States, definition of the United States, is a corporation. Okay? It doesn't say a government. It says a corporation. So now that we know a corporation, if we look up the word corporation, has anyone ever looked up a corporation? They have stockholders. That's the big part. They also have a board of directors. And the corporation is run and operated by the board of directors. So if the United States is, in fact, a corporation, I don't want to step on anybody's toes if you're here for a first time and you're new, okay? Just do some investigation. So here's what I did. It says that, are you with me? Okay, let's look up the definitions of the word in this code. And remember, this is just a code. So I didn't get to do code, but if you were in a Boy Scout, you have a code of honor, right? If you break the code of honor, can you go to jail?
No.
Why? Because it's not a law, right? Okay, codes are for a group of people that agree to abide or behave in a manner that's consistent with a code. Okay, so remember, the U.S., they're giving us notice. This is just a code. This is not law. So if you guys act like you're under this code, you're going to pay the fine for breaking this code. Okay, so I use the Electric Law website, and the reason why I do Electric Law is because it has the terminologies that attorneys and judges use. So it's really good to use that. But I also like the Black's Law Dictionary. So we're going to start all over with 4108, verification of consent of offender to transfer to the United States. Okay? If you look at, we already went over the United States. Now, some people think the United States is exactly the same thing as the United States of America with different capitals. You're wrong. It's much different. America is not the same thing as the United States, nor is North America the same thing as America. Okay? I mean, when you say North America, we're talking about Mexico, America, and Canada. Okay, now, I just took the words. So it says prior to the transfer. So let's look up the word transfer. So I look up the word transfer. I skipped the part right there where it says, okay, first is the United States. The same place or thing as the United States of America. And to some it is. But to the watchful eye, it's two separate and distinct places far away from each other, yet they're so close that they're literally on top of each other. When you walk into the court, you are actually walking into a foreign country. The court's goal is to obtain your consent before it moves forward and transfers your person to their country or their state. Like every state has its border, we need to know where the borders are. We need to know where the borders are for the court, okay? And the borders are realistically in the words you speak, the way you conduct yourself, and the mannerisms in which you treat the judge, okay? If you act like a slave, they're going to treat you like one. If you act with responsibility and like you are not a slave and you're not a citizen and there's no contract in place, then he is going to treat you accordingly, okay? So the word transfer, the act by which the owner of a thing delivers it to another person with the intent of passing the rights which he has in it to the latter. Anybody hear that? I'm going to transfer my rights to the judge, okay? And once I do that, if I had the right to put me in jail, he now has the right to put me in jail. Or he has the right to impose a fine or levy on me. Okay. Now, if I don't transfer that right to a corporation, the corporation comes from the word corpse. It means it's dead. Okay. That corpse cannot do anything without me moving it. By me giving him transfer, by transferring something to him, he now has it. So this is what they're looking to do. They're trying to transfer your rights to them. They have to do it every time you walk in. They can't do it once, and it's good for the rest of your life. Every time. Okay. To transfer means to change. For example, one may transfer a legacy, and then there's these three, first, second, and third things. The third one is the most important. It says, by the change of the person who has bound to pay the legacy, as I direct the sum of $100 which I directed should be charged upon my house, which means estate, which I gave to quorum, shall be paid by my executors. Okay, so what that, if you understand what that says that I can tell Jim to pay my bill. The judge realistically, is the trustee. The executors, okay, took our birth certificates, they funded the nation, and now we are the sponsor of the credit. We are the sponsor. Why the corporation is able to operate is because of our signature and because of what our value is. Okay, so the offender. Now, this is, if this gets too deep and if I get way off in the deep end, I'm sorry. We'll take a break or we'll just stop. But when you get pulled over by a highway patrolman, you're an offender. At some point, you show up for your first hearing and now you're the defendant. How did they do that? It's a magic wand. I'm serious.
I get it.
If you guys have ever been, pulled over, it says you have committed offense. You're an offender and you sign. Without committing, without signing for guilt, you're going to appear. Okay? Well, if you sign that document, you entered a contract. It's a contract because there's two people on it. And it's actually a negotiable bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It means you sign something to be paid for in advance. Now, without saying too much about this, you need to take care of that ticket within 3 days. If you don't, you're turned into a defendant. I'm going to go into some of the stuff, what it says in Title 18 in the dictionary. It talks about Title 18. Because you don't come in early enough, they treat you like a juvenile delinquent. And that's what they call you in Title 18. Because you can't handle your affairs, we're going to be your mom and dad for you. And we're going to take care of this for you. Okay, so offender. A person who has been convicted of an offense or has been adjudicated or adjudged to have committed an act of juvenile delinquency, and it specifically says 18 U.S.C. And that's what we're checking on.
Where's this definition, Bill?
The definition is electric law.
Electric law?
Yeah, electric law. And it's, if you look up electric law on the internet, it'll show you that. So this is, I'm going to go over the same thing again. I believe that we have 3 days to settle all disputes on the private side before it is brought to the public side. When we don't, we have literally changed from an offender to a defendant. Our dishonor has moved the thing to default, and it says the court sees us as a juvenile delinquent. We don't show up and settle the issues without being called to by a court summons 20 to 30 days later. That makes us a defender now. So if you look up the word consent, consent is either express or implied. Express, when it is given viva voice, out of your mouth, or in writing. Implied, when it is manifested by signs, actions, or facts, or by inactive or silent, which raise a presumption that the consent has been given. An agreement to something proposed and differs from assent. Consent supposes a physical power to act, a moral power of acting, and a serious, determined, and free use of these powers. So they're saying again that we're giving the power to the judge to do to us what we should have done to him. Okay. Voluntary. I mean, these are all cool words. Now, these are all these words in the very front, remember? Prior to a transfer of an offender to the United States, the fact that the offender consents to such transfer and that such consent is voluntary and with full knowledge of the consequences. Okay. Now, what was really funny is when I asked this one judge about Title 18, he said, that's referring to a foreign country. I said, really? Can I read that to you? Because I didn't see the word foreign country in there anywhere. It doesn't say foreign country anywhere, does it? Okay, knowledge. Knowledge, information as to a matter or fact. Many acts are perfectly innocent when the party performing them is not aware of certain circumstances attending them. For example, someone may pass a counterfeit note and be criminally guiltless if they did not know it was counterfeit. Or someone may receive stolen goods if they were not aware of the fact that they were stolen. In these types of cases, it is the guilty knowledge or center which makes the crime. So the judge says, do you have knowledge? Do you understand what you did? And when you say yes,
bam,
you're saying that you understand that you broke a law. And now you've lied. That's the worst thing, because you didn't break a law when you were speeding. You violated a code. And the code is in an act. We went over this, I think, 2 weeks ago. The Department of Motor Vehicles Act, which is what he was saying, read today. They were letting the DPS know. The Motor Vehicle Act was passed unanimously by whoever, okay? The word act, if you go to see your kids at a school play, they're acting, right? When you go there, you can tell they're acting because they all have on costumes and they're playing parts. Okay, so when you get pulled over by a highway patrolman, he's in a car that's all painted up so you know he's part of an act. He walks up in a costume, hat and stripes on his pants. If they wore that out to dinner, not being a cop, okay, they just wore that out, they'd be in trouble. Okay, so after he gives you a ticket, now he wants you to participate in an act. And the act is you broke a code, and we want you to come down to our playground. It's like a basketball court. That's why we call it a court, because we're going to play a game on it. And there's going to be someone there acting like a judge, and he's in his costume. He has a black robe on. And the suit against you, we're letting you know it's really not a suit. It's just that the attorney is wearing a suit. He's going to be there. And there's a bailiff dressed up in a bailiff's costume. And he's got some costume jewelry on called a gun and a badge and some handcuffs. Okay, I even know a bailiff who told me that he had plastic handcuffs because they were heavy. And he was lightening up his belt. He didn't have any bullets in his clips because he never needed them. He's in a real quiet town, so he had all this stuff on. And he had it all done up in plastic because it was too heavy to carry around every day. He had all this stuff under his desk so he could get to it if he needed to. It's all an act. And when we agree to play in the act, it comes with some severe consequences. Consequence. That's the next one. You understand the consequences. Remember what it says in there? Full knowledge of the consequences. And we say, yeah, we have full knowledge of the consequences. I could go to jail, and if you'll let me off, which is maybe a fine, I'll try not to speed anymore. I'll get my radar detector working better. The effect results or outcome of something occurring earlier. That's a consequence. The accident was a consequence of reckless driving. Now, look at number two. An act or instance of following something as an effect, result, or outcome. An act. They tell you. Consequence has something to do with Title 18. It's an act. In general, the law of California declares that everyone is responsible for an injury occasioned to another by his want of ordinary care. I can't even tell you what that means, okay? But that is a brutal, brutal thing when you understand what I just read, if you're a secured party creditor. Do you hear me? I'm going to read it one more time so you guys understand that. In general, the law of California declares, and this is in 1872, and it's never been overturned, that everyone is responsible for an injury occasioned to another by his want of ordinary care or skill in the management of his property or person. So how many people here are a person? Raise your hand. How many people have a person? All right. We're learning. See? This is what it takes. I got to say that I hang around some people that are so far beyond us here that they don't come to these meetings because they're flying like in the Matrix. They're flying everywhere. Okay, we're still trying to run to the phone to get out. You know, and it's like a phone to your lawyer. Help me! Help! And he's just flying in and out. He's just having these guys that I run around with. They understand all this stuff. So what I thought I'd do tonight with all this stuff, just so I touch on it one more time, is when you look at something, read what the words mean, because I did not understand what any of these words realistically meant, and yet I was agreeing to the terms of them. So we get on to verification, because it has to be verified after you consent willingly, okay? Verification. Whenever new matter is introduced on either side, that's the defendant or the plaintiff, the plea must conclude with a verification or averment. Anybody heard the terminology negative averment? Verification or averment in order that the other party may have an opportunity of answering it. The usual verification of a plea containing matter of fact is in these words. And this, he is ready to verify. So they say that Now, how do you verify a negative statement that you can't answer correctly? That's how they ask you questions, so that you can't answer. If I said to Jim, how many times have you been caught cheating on your wife? What's your answer? None. So I say to him, great, so you're really good at cheating on your wife without her finding out. It doesn't matter how he answered. If he said one or two, there's no way to answer the question without being in the hot seat. Okay? So when they're verifying stuff, this is how they do it. They trick you. In one instance, however, new matter need not conclude with a verification because the pleader, and it says, and then the pleader may pray judgment without it. For example, when the matter pleaded is merely negative, the reason of it is evident. A negative requires no proof, and it would therefore be impertinent or nugatory for the pleader who pleads a negative matter to declare his readiness to prove it. Okay, so it says practice. The examination of the truth of a writing is certificate that the writing is true. Okay, so how many times have you ever been to court and the attorney says, just for instance, Mr. Faust was pulled over on March 15th, 1983, speeding at 162 mile an hour on a motorcycle. When do we ever, objection, is he going to take an oath before he starts testifying? Anybody ever done that? I have.
You have.
The judge says, would you raise your right hand? The cop looked at me. I looked at the judge and now he's got to swear that he's telling the truth, okay? Now, if an attorney is there, can the attorney swear to the facts that he saw that the highway patrolman wrote the ticket for? He can't. That's secondhand knowledge. That's hearsay. So if the attorney won't raise his hand and he starts talking again, you go, Judge, tell him to shut up. He's blabbing and he's causing contempt of court because he is talking about something that he has not firsthand knowledge of. It's all hearsay. So if he's going to testify, he's going to have to sign under penalty of perjury that what he's saying is the absolute truth, and he's going to have to bring the proof here today. Not some paper that the highway patrolman said he saw you doing it. Okay? Because we'll get to the highway patrolman a little bit later. Because I'm not participating in the act, and I told him when he pulled me over. I told him his costume looked silly. All right. Now, here's how the plaintiff need not verify the truth of the complaint. The offender only needs to be presumed, and his own consent will work. Okay? So here's how they get consent. All rise. You stand up. You gave him consent.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. Y'all sit down. Get consent. You're dead. Doesn't matter what you plead. It does not matter what you plead after that point. They never give you a plea of innocent. They give you a plea of guilty, not guilty, or no contest. All three of them are all confrontational. Every one of them. It doesn't matter. At that point, you're already done. If you agree to consent to a plea. Now, I'm not telling you all this so that you can go in and cause more confrontation. I got really good news at the end of this. Take off your hat. Cassandra did really good. Excuse me. We've got to bleep that out. I didn't mean to use your last name.
I don't care.
He don't care. He's Superman now. He's flying in and out of the court.
No, but not hardly.
Okay, well, the judge came in and said, take off your hat. And he said, if you can show me the rule and law and code, says I have to take off the hat. I'll agree. And
I'll be more than happy to take off my hat.
I'll be more than happy to take off my hat. And the judge, there isn't one. Nowhere. So the judge says, well, I'd like for you to take off the hat. And he goes, what'll happen if I don't? And the judge looked down and goes, nothing. is that cool? I got to tell you. Now, here's what he was doing. The judge is just trying to get some consent there. That's all he's looking for. Okay? Now, that's one way to blatantly come in and get on the consent game. And I love it. I'm going to start wearing 4 or 5 hats. Okay. So, it's some cool stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your name? I'll give you my name upon proof claim. Do you have a claim here? What's the name on your claim? What's your name, by the way? This one judge, he said, my name's Judge. I'm not going to give you his last name because he's really a good guy. He seems to be a good guy. So he says, I'm Judge Brown. And I go, really? Guy, your parents must have been incredible. They named you judge before you were judge. Did they know you were going to be a judge when you grew up?
That's your first name, Judge? He's looking at me like, what's your first name? He says, my name here in this court is Judge Brown. He's not going to give me his first name. Well, if he doesn't have to give me his first name, do I have to give him mine?
No.
I don't. But he's not looking for my first name. He's looking for three names. I'm first, middle, and last. That's part of a contract. Three all together, remember? Okay. So I'm just giving you stuff that you can start rolling around in your mind. Now, I'm not saying all this stuff so that we can go to court and be confrontational, because that is not what this is about. This is about so that you understand what's going on when you get there, before you get there. Okay? And knowing what's going to happen before you get there, some stuff needs to happen 3 days before, or 3 days within 3 days of the time you get there. Okay? Now, we get some really good, some really good battles that we have won in the 3 day rule. Okay? So, if you guys want to get together with somebody here that's part of the assembly, we can point you in the right direction so you can start learning this stuff. Now, if you want to play in the Super Bowl and you want to win a traffic ticket like that, it makes a lot of sense to start practicing before you get there. Okay? One thing before you get to a court is you want to go see how all the players play on it and how good they are. So if you're really interested in doing some stuff, it's a good thing to go down and just see how a judge handles himself in the court. I went down to the biggest courthouse in Phoenix. And we went in there and sat down and we have watched some court cases. When I go to my little town and I walk into the court now and I just kind of slide into the back, okay, because I've established myself there a little bit. I'm not bragging, okay? The first time I went to court, they almost threw up on the table right there because I was so nervous about what I was saying. But now when I slide in, you can see the judge look over at me and he's, Bill, are you on the calendar today? He calls me Bill. Don't you love him? I'm not Mr. Faust anymore. Bill, are you on the calendar today? No, I'm just here to say hi and see how everybody's doing and just to observe. Carry on. And he goes, oh, okay. And you can see. When you're on a plantation, you can't talk to the slaves. So you guys have come into a federal free zone here, and we're talking to you like you're not a slave. So when you leave here, if you start acting like a slave, don't start using this stuff, being a slave, because if you're going to try and get in both, it doesn't work. And I will tell you that there's a lot of people that are upset about being slaves, but they don't want to move off the plantation. They just want better living conditions. So if you feel that way, that's okay. That's your right, and we stand behind you in that decision. But if you want to move off the plantation and start your own, just like starting any new business, it gets a little lean at first, okay? There's no one there to help you. You got to build your own house. You got to lay your crops down. You got to get your own horse. If you don't have a horse, you got to talk your wife into pulling that plow. Okay, one of the sentences in the verification process up here, it says that the sentence was imposed by the United States magistrate judge or by a citizen specifically designated by the judge of the United States. And if you look at that, magistrate judge of the United States are not the same thing. Okay, so when you show up there, you've got a judge that's actually trying to move you into his country, and he's going to do it via a ship, a vessel. And the vessel has, you know, the old warships that had the side railing and they had all the wooden poles coming up there and it had a bar across the top of it? And there's a little gate that opens so that you can climb on the ship. You can come through that gate. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
He's inviting you to come on in and contract with him. He's inviting you to come on over here on my ship, because if you come on my ship, my law is the law of the high seas. And once you're here, you're in big trouble. There ain't nothing you can do when you're on someone else's ship. So I'm saying all that because they're giving us notice. That bar right there is a very important part of consent. If you walk across that without establishing some boundaries or some rules for that judge to operate under, he's not going to operate under. You guys understanding all this stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't, get together later on tonight and talk to somebody about that. Okay, the word judge here is used in two distinct positions. One is the United States magistrate judge, and one is the judge of the United States. It says it right in the U.S. Code. Yes, the judge quietly changes his robe of jurisdiction as he guides you quietly from the statutory law venue into an admiralty law venue. Admiralty law is a whole other animal. But in brief, it can only deal in or with contracts, expressed contracts or implied contracts. Remember when he said they've rescinded all their signatures off of all the contracts and we need to be careful how we deal with those individuals. It didn't say persons, it said individuals.
When I read that thing, it started popping out. Did it say U.S. citizens? We need to be careful how we treat these citizens. It said individuals. A person is a corporation. You're acting in the capacity of a corporation. And a corporation always falls underneath some other corporation. It has to. Because if you're a corporation in Arizona, you have an Arizona Corporation Commission number, right? Well, guess who all the states incorporated under? United States. So now you're nothing more than an employee. So if you were to walk into Walmart with sandals on and shorts, and you were having a drink, parking lot, maybe a refreshment, and you went in there to work and you clocked on and they saw you like that, what would the manager do? He'd say, you're out of here. 2 weeks off without pay, don't ever come in here without safety toe shoes, you can't wear shorts in here, and you definitely can't be drinking in the parking lot before you come in here, and if you do it again, you have had it. In fact, we're going to go ahead and fine you. 2 weeks, no pay. Now, what if I am not an employee of Walmart, and I'm out in the parking lot, and I have a swig, and I walk in with my shorts and sandals, and I walk over to the alcohol aisle, and I pick up alcohol, or I pick up some new swim shorts, because these are a little dirty, and I walk back up there, and they see me, what are they going to say to me? Nothing.
Paper or plastic?
Paper or plastic? The reason is because I'm not an employee. I'm not a citizen of that act. That code doesn't apply to me. With that comes responsibility. Okay? Can't be drinking and driving out in the parking lot. I can't be offending my neighbor while I'm in the court. I mean, I'm in the store. And I need to wait my turn in line. I need to be respectful. I need to uphold even the other slaves that are in there. Excuse me, citizens. I need to be respectful to them, because just because they don't know does not mean that they're not equal with me. So it shall be verified in the country in which the sentence was imposed. So the word country. The word country is notice to us that we are about to leave the republic and enter into a foreign country. It is a key word to their jurisdiction. They must establish a boundary and give notice before we board their vessel and enter a contest to their commercial rules. It is well known that their country is associated with a bar, or the British Accredited Registry, or, you guessed it, England. It seems that we Americans are still under the rule if they can establish consent, and they usually get it every time by voluntary consent. So this is the way I study. When you look up understand, the word understand, if you split it up and turn it backwards, it means to stand under. And that's okay. I stand under God's laws. I stand under God. Okay, He's the Redeemer. He's paid all for all my sins. And all I have to do is consent to the forgiveness. And the word forgiveness weighs really heavy in a court. Okay? When you ask for forgiveness, it's a whole different animal there. So I'm telling you all this stuff because if we learn every word that we say and we start changing our phrasing, we can start living, okay? I mean, we can actually live instead of existing in fear.
Okay, Morris, we've come to the end of the broadcast, and I hope you all have gotten something out of this. Make sure that you play this over and over and glean the information from this, very, very informative information, especially when you come to dealing in the court. My thing is to make sure we beat them before we ever go, but for those of you who find yourself down in there, there is a way and things that you can do. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time, got my